In professional wrestling, only real men can wear pink and black. And now, thanks to the Shining Wizards, you can too. Available at ShiningWizards.com/merch, the brand new Shining Wizards logo Heart Attack version t-shirts. They're limited in numbers and limited in size, so get yours now at ShiningWizards.com/merch. Tonight's episode of the Shining Wizards podcast is brought to you by the Shining Wizards Network. www.ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. 9 great shows, 1 great place, including Pro Wrestling 101 with 20-year veteran Justin Credible, 2.5 wrestlers featuring Kevin Matthews, Pat Buck, and Jay Silva, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks from Staten Island, the Impact Play of Mr. Phil Rea and Dave Megapowers, taking it from the current to the way back, the Midnight Jory, Mike Norenganger and Adam Heading from Philadelphia, giving you wrestling, pop culture, and horror movies from the 80s and 90s, the Fallen Angels triplets, Dante, Kanzer, and Krim Gideon, giving you the ins and outs of their experiences on the pro wrestling independent scene, the Neckbreaker podcast, Brian and John from Boston, giving you pro wrestling and heavy metal news, and to top it off, from north of the border, Apex Radio with our friend the Stickman, and the Forearms and Funk Radio Spectacular with the Wolfman Jack Foley. That's the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boo, and at www.ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, where it's entertainment here. The following is a presentation of the Shining Wizards Network, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Audio Boo, and ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
Hi, everybody. This is original Glow Girl Little Egypt, and you're listening to Shining Wizards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a star-studded, action-packed edition from the annals of the World Wrestling Entertainment to the total nonstop action to the impact in your colon. We are the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast, where it's wrestling talk.
Wait, did you do that on purpose?
Yeah, kind of.
Annals and buttholes?
And yeah. Colons?
And colon.
That's wrestling talk.
My.
Oh, talk about wrestling. That was my line.
Yeah.
I'm Bill Burr.
Oh,
what?
Jesus.
What? This isn't even wrestling.
I'm Bill
related.
Burr. There's a point to this. I'm Bill Burr.
I'm Opie?
No.
I'm Jim Gaffigan.
And on the line.
Wait, Opie can be a comedian?
You could have fucking said anybody. You could have said Jim Norton, George Carlin.
You could have said
Joe Rogan.
You could have said our guest joining us right now, who's a very funny comedian out of Pittsburgh. He resides in the Northeast in New Jersey, performs all over the country. He's performed in L.A., Caroline's, Broadway Comedy Club, New York Comedy Club. He's one of my closest friends in the business. He's a diehard wrestling fan, and he was at the Royal Rumble Sunday night. Adam Lucidi joins us on the Shining Wizards hotline. Adam, how are you tonight, bud?
Good, how you doing, bud? Thanks for having me.
Fuck you, Tony. This is a fucking friend of mine, all right, jerk?
Well, listen, I was trying to give him so he could say his name. That's why I went comedians, but some schmuck sitting to my right screwed the whole intro
up. Had a 10-minute meeting about what we were going to open the show with beforehand, and none of this came up.
Oh, wait, exactly. You mean this?
Oh, that?
This.
Can he hear this?
Oh, yeah, you can hear this, right, Adam? Well, okay.
That's all right. So,
Adam, there is a purpose to you being on the Shining Wizards hotline tonight, is there not?
There is.
Okay. Can you tell everybody that's listening right now what that purpose is?
I am tonight. I'm going to be the official ambassador for the Pittsburgh crowd from the Royal Rumble this past Sunday.
Okay.
Because I was there. I was there in person, and I've never seen or heard such a hostile crowd for a WWE event there ever.
All right, so we're just going to cut the bullshit. We're going to get down to it, Adam. Number 30, the countdown starts. 10, 9, 8. Fucking Rey Mysterio comes out. How quickly did that crowd turn?
They turned. Listen, I don't think I could have said Booyakov quick enough for how fast that they started booing. Like, it was immediate. Because I think everybody. Well, here's the weird part. They showed, like, the you know, like, their little promos and stuff on the Titantron, like, before the actual Royal Rumble, everybody saying they're going to win the Royal Rumble and stuff like that. And surprisingly, when Rey Mysterio popped up there, he got a few boos in the arena, which I was surprised with. But once number 30 came out and it was him, that place just went berserk. Like, it honestly, I don't think they stopped booing until he got thrown out, and then once he got thrown out, they cheered. But then from that point on, it was just Daniel Bryan chants and boos, and it turned ugly real quick.
Now I know there was glimpses of you know, there was boring chants. I know you started a bunch of chants, we want Angle chant, which is great with Pittsburgh being his hometown. But, I mean, you could tell the crowd was hostile watching it on TV during the Cena-Orton match.
Adam.
I don't even know where I'm going right now.
I got it. Adam, what was worse, the hostility during the Rumble or the hostility during the John Cena-Randy Orton match?
There was I think that the hostility during Orton-Cena was a lot more fun than the Rumble, because I think WWE shot themselves in the foot, because they opened it up with Daniel Bryan, Bray Wyatt. And once he lost, I think everyone in that arena was like, I bet he's going to be in a Rumble now. I bet he's going to be in that Rumble. So I think that gave everybody in the audience a little bit of hope that he was actually going to show up so they could start going nuts. And as time went on, we just saw that wasn't going to be the case. And they turned hostile real quick at the end of that Rumble, to the point where I didn't get to see the playback yet, but they said that they lowered the audience's mic and raised the music when Batista won, because everybody was chanting no, everybody was booing, there was a bullshit chant at some point, so I didn't get to see that yet, where the actual playback of him winning.
Now, like, we all, like, when we watch the Rumble, like, when it gets down to, like, the numbers, like, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, we always do a checklist in our mind of who is actually going to be left. And then I thought by 28, when I realized Rey Mysterio wasn't out there yet, that Daniel Bryan wasn't going to be in this match. Was there any sense to you or the people around you? Did it come earlier than the 30 mark that you realized Daniel Bryan wasn't going to be in the match?
It was probably about, like, I'd say, like how you said, 28, 29, because I knew, because we were sitting there counting, like, who we still haven't seen yet and who they said that was going to be in the match. And Rey Mysterio was one of them. And I think at, like, 28, I don't know who 28 was. I don't know if it was a waste,
Batista,
or if it was an actual.
I think it was, like, 26.
Who was it?
No, I think Batista was 28.
Really?
27 or 28. No, I'm pretty sure it was 28.
I feel like he was earlier, because didn't he throw out Ryback?
Oh, yeah, it might have been, because Ryback came in and
ADR
no one
was
cared.
Later.
And they tried
oh, yeah,
to
you might be right.
Down with those two.
Yeah, see, how, like, and also, what was you always get the big man spots. Was there any reaction at all to the Batista facing off with Ryback?
No, it was completely. I even turned to my one friend and I said, I think that they wanted that to be a little bit more important than it actually was, because no one cared. I mean, why would you care about Batista and a guy who tweets like Amanda Bynes facing off in the Royal Rumble?
Now, were you in Pittsburgh for the whole weekend, or were you just there for the Rumble?
I got in, I went specifically just for the Royal Rumble. My friend got tickets. I've always wanted to go to a Royal Rumble. I never got to go to one. And, you know, I've been to, like, WrestleMania and Survivor Series and stuff like that. So I've been to, like, a whole bunch of them. But I was more excited about Royal Rumble than probably any of the other ones that I've gone to before. And that crowd just made it so much more fun. I couldn't believe how much fun that crowd was.
Well, now you weren't at the Jersey show the night after WrestleMania where the whole Fandangoing thing started and when Dolph Ziggler cashed in.
And I was so upset I couldn't go to that. And like I even said, I was like, this is probably what it felt like that night in Jersey, because it was, I mean, I will say my heart was with section 105 and 106, because I was in 105 and 106 was just as rowdy as our section was. And that's where all the chants, I think, started coming from with during the Orton Cena match.
Now you're there, you're watching the Rumble, you're counting guys. As a wrestling fan, does it annoy you when the JBL is in the Rumble, the midget dressed as a bull or whatever the fuck he is? Does that frustrate you as a wrestling fan, knowing now when it's all done, like Daniel Bryan wasn't in there? They couldn't even throw us a Zack Ryder or that
who
Kevin
was listed.
Right.
And so was, Curtis Axel was listed. Not that I give a shit about Curtis Axel.
No, but I mean, you throw us Nash. There was a big thing for Jake Roberts to be in the Rumble. I mean,
and
all these spots that could have gone to better guys.
Curtis Axel wasn't in Rumble because he was sitting ringside behind the Spanish announce table.
Was he?
No, Ben Roethlisberger was, but they're practically the same person. They're the same thing.
They might as well be.
I think I was more mad, like, you know, El Torito running out there. Every year they have, like, some kind of little funny thing or whatever. I think I was more mad that Great Khali was there than El Torito.
Yeah. Great Khali was rough. And they did the same thing where they bring in an NXT guy again.
Who I actually thought was awesome, by the way.
Yeah, I haven't seen that guy, but he was pretty good.
He seemed like he belonged. Like other than like Bo Dallas last year or whatever year it was. Bo Dallas was last year. He came in. He looked like a boy amongst men. This dude looked like he was on the roster for months. Did the crowd, and that's actually a good point to bring up, did the crowd pop or react at all to Alex, was it Alex Rusev? Or?
I think they did. I think I heard a little bit like from the side. But for the most part, it wasn't. Like I said, I think everybody was just waiting for Daniel Bryan. And I will say, like, I told my friend when CM Punk came down, because he was first, I said, imagine how CM Punk feels knowing that he can do pretty much anything he wants at this point, and we're not going to shit on him because, you know, he was following Orton Cena. He can come out there and do whatever he wants, and we're still going to embrace him and just be so happy that he's there rather than Orton and Cena.
So overall, Rumble, outside of no Daniel Bryan, what did you think of the whole card?
I really liked the Wyatt Daniel Bryan match. That one was really good.
I thought that finish was great. The dive.
Yeah, it was a really good, you know, really good match. Lesnar Big Show was. I could I call it a squash?
I think so.
I don't even know if I should or not.
The only thing the Big Show did was throw his
the one punch.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. The train wreck of Orton and Cena. I don't think I watched more than 3 minutes of that match because I was too busy watching the crowd and looking around and, you know, keeping an eye on where the wave was going because the wave was in the middle section. A Bobby Lashley chant almost started getting loud.
And he hasn't been relevant in how long?
Exactly. I think Angle's been more relevant than him. But, I mean, Angle hasn't been in WWE for, like, probably 10 years or so, and that caught on. But what surprised me the most was, we want divas. Was a chant.
That's a rough one.
And no one honestly gives a shit about the divas and the fact that caught on.
And I didn't even. I was looking back at the video. Someone made a video of all the chants that Pittsburgh was doing, and I didn't even hear Undertaker at one point. But Undertaker went through. Randy Savage was one.
I heard Savage.
And this match, that one didn't get through for some reason, but that one was loud. This is awful.
What about the
We Want Angle, We Want Divas. Thank you, Wyatt.
There it is.
I think the pop for the Wyatts when they first came out was the biggest pop of that match.
Adam, let me ask you this, because I noticed something on TV. Did Kane stay out there the entire time in the public view before he made the run in, or did he like go under the ring? Because I noticed him on screen like 5 minutes after he was eliminated. It was still just festering out there. What happened? Did he come back out?
I honestly have no idea where he was, because all of a sudden I see Kane go running by like down around the steps where, and that was around the time I think JBL came out.
Right.
When JBL got in the ring,
I could have sworn I saw Kane behind JBL. I could have sworn when JBL was getting into the ring.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it looked like he was like trying to duck out of a camera's way or something. I don't know where Kane was up until that point, but it was surprising to see him scurry around there like a wet cat. I didn't know where he came from or where he was going. But
yeah,
apparently he hid behind a referee for the rest of the time.
Yeah, he's a terrible hider, Kane.
Yeah.
Adam, anything else you want to give us insight on your night? Was the crowd hostile to each other? Were there any fights that broke out? Did you see it?
No, I didn't see any fights or anything. I think that Pittsburgh definitely was unified as one on Sunday, and I think they made their collective voice heard loud and clear at the end of that Royal Rumble, during the championship match. And, I'm honestly surprised that there wasn't any garbage thrown or anything.
I was honestly expecting, we were like one step away, I feel like, from that happening.
Because some people even started leaving when it came down to Sheamus, Roman Reigns, and Batista. Some people started actually walking out. And once Batista finally won, like I said, I guess they, you know, lowered our mic and raised the music mic a little bit.
Now,
but
the crowd
started walking around, flipping off fans, and right before he went backstage, he, you know, mocked the yes chant. But instead of, this actually did kind of make me laugh a little bit. Instead of actually using his index fingers like how we do for the yes chant, he was using his middle fingers as his pointers.
So he was saying yes, raising the double birds?
Yep. And I think that pissed off a lot of people even more there.
Well, I mean, he's supposed to be a babyface, too. And apparently his run is not going over well at all right now.
No, it's going to be a long 2 years for Batista.
Yeah, I agree. And let me ask you one more question before we do let you go. When the crowd started popping at the end for Roman Reigns, do you feel like it was just a desperation for something to cling on to because they weren't getting Daniel Bryan? Or do you think they genuinely appreciated Roman Reigns and think he's going to be a big star?
I think it was, I mean, I definitely could see, you know, people just being like, oh, well, since there's no Daniel Bryan, I guess we'll cling on to Roman Reigns. But I mean, I think a lot of people are starting to like Roman Reigns genuinely. And I think that everyone realized, okay, I mean, it's going to be better than Batista. At least it'll be something new and different if Roman Reigns actually wins. But, I mean, obviously we didn't get that. Because every time, you know, Reigns would do something, that crowd cheered loud as shit rather than Batista. And I would assume from WWE's standpoint that they wanted it the other way around. But everybody was popping for Roman Reigns rather than Batista.
Well, there you go. Adam Lucidi is a very, very funny comedian. I've worked with him a lot. He's headlined shows all over the country. Diehard wrestling fan. And tonight, our live Royal Rumble correspondent, but he was there live, and he was our Royal Rumble correspondent. Follow him on Twitter, at Adam Lucidi, Adam, L-U-C-I-D-I. Like I said, when me and him talk about wrestling, we're anything but funny because we love the business so much. But trust me, if you see his name on a flyer, on a website, on a promo, go check out his shows. I'm very happy that he was able to join us. And Adam, thanks a lot, buddy, for coming in. And we will talk to you soon. All right, bud?
Hey, man, I appreciate it. I still want Angle, goddammit. I still want Angle.
Sounds good, Adam. We'll have to get you in the studio sometime to bullshit about wrestling.
For sure. Sounds good.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you in a little bit, all right?
All right, guys.
Later, bud.
See ya.
Yeah.
So that was Adam Lucidi. Please check him out. Follow him on Twitter. Great stand-up comedian. Friend of the show. Friend of Kevin Garifo's. Kevin, I want to talk to you. Not just you, but I mean everybody out there.
That's what we do. We talk wrestling and wrestling talk about wrestling and wrestling talk about.
I saw the Royal Rumble. I wasn't supposed to see the Royal Rumble because I went out to dinner with the fiance and family. We ended up at a spot that was actually showing the Royal Rumble.
Look at you.
So my pimp hand was strong, and I got to see the Rumble.
You got it like that.
Up until Mysterio drew 30, I thought the card was great. I didn't have high expectations for Orton Cena. I think the Lesnar thing was a day late and a dollar short.
I was expecting a bigger spot with the Lesnar Big Show match. I really was. I was expecting not collapse the ring big, but I was thinking they would do something more than just a beatdown with the chair.
I felt like I wish they would have made Brock look stronger earlier. If he had done something like that where he squashed Cena months and months ago, like you have him come in, he loses the Cena, he loses the Triple H. It's just, it looks goofy.
I think with Brock Lesnar, he's the kind of guy that is a once, and not a lifetime, but a once in a long time talent where you can forget about the past stuff he's done based on who he is in that moment and what he does in that moment. And I think his destroying Mark Henry leading to the Big Show feud was well done. I think that they had to make somebody a believable threat to Brock Lesnar to sell the match. And I think that because Brock Lesnar was manhandled by the Big Show, it added intrigue into the match. And I think that it was a well-designed build-up. I just wish, I agree with you at the point where I wish they did more to establish. I wish Brock Lesnar put the arm breaker on him at the end and broke his arm at the end of the match to just signify how devastating he was going
to
be.
Yeah, it just seemed to go like way too long, honestly.
The beatdown?
And the punch, like Brock Lesnar should have just no-sold that punch, honestly.
But that was really the only offense that he got.
Yeah, but
it was hardly Rock Mankind with the chair shots. Hardly Rock Mankind.
I don't think anyone was expecting that.
I expected something big out of them. I did.
But, looking at the whole picture, obviously, WWE didn't do what everyone expected. Did they drop the ball? We can't say that because we don't know.
I can say that.
Can you?
I think so.
If Daniel Bryan wins the Elimination Chamber, somehow he ends up in the main event at WrestleMania. Did they drop the ball at Rumble? Yes, but in a grand scheme of things?
Yeah, all right. That's a different question.
Here's my problem. It's something that there's a reason why maybe the Shining Wizards don't really. Facebook, Twitter, like people need to fucking calm down.
I agree. Yeah,
because statements like, I hope Vince McMahon gets cancer, I hope Vince McMahon dies, in general is a terrible idea, regardless of if you're joking or not, but it puts a very negative light on wrestling fans in general.
I don't disagree with that whatsoever, and I do agree with you that people do need to calm down, and a lot of opinions get molded into one, and they force their way into your head. Vince McMahon's been doing this. The stock is higher than it's ever been. He's doing something right.
Right. And don't get me wrong. You have every right to be frustrated. But the whole idea of something like wrestling, just like a reality show or a soap opera, is to get a reaction. That's all you need. And for them to get the reaction they got, it's not like they're, like, everyone's posting, like, WrestleMania 30 stuff. Like, for all you know, because I just feel like it's the day and age we're in, is Vince, Triple H, that whole company, it seems like in the last year, huge on fucking trending apps. I mean, you can't go on Facebook.
True, but
without it saying trending. So if you say, you know, you go to Dave Meltzer, not saying he would do this, but Vince goes to him and says,
Dave, this is my five twisted T's in, Vince McMahon.
No, here we go.
You're fired, Dave Meltzer. This is the WrestleMania 30 card we're going to give you, posted on the internet.
Before you know it, it's not even the Rumble, and it's Daniel Bryan's wrestling Sheamus. And it's just, it's creating buzz for the WWE. Whether negative or positive, you're still getting press.
True, absolutely true. You know,
and they can't get through a three-hour Raw without changing it 100 fucking times.
Well, that's ultimately a problem that came out of yesterday. But here's my thing, like you say, like you know, we can't, and I'm agreeing with Kevin on this. It's like, well, let's wait and see. We've been waiting and seeing with Daniel Bryan for what feels like 45 years at this point. It's like you can't have this guy, you can't have the sympathetic babyface keep getting beat down and beat down and beat down and not get any sort of redemption. And has he gotten any redemption? No. Take a look even at Raw. They still stuck it to him. They're like, well, we feel bad that we made you wrestle 3, 4, 5 times on previous nights against 3, 4, 5 different men. That's why we didn't put you in the Rumble. It's like, Jesus Christ, you just, like, you lose hope for that character. And we talk about it. Wrestling is not like, oh, you know, it's all a show. It's all, yeah, it's a show, but it's a show where we go and we want to suspend our disbelief, if I may quote Eddie, and we want this guy, you know, good conquers evil. When is good going to conquer evil in this? Good just keeps getting fucking stomped on for a smiling guy wearing a baseball cap with a big C on it.
It's good, but it's not the good that we want. It's somebody else's idea of the good, which is John Cena.
Let me ask you this. That whole we want to suspend our disbelief thing, it's not disbelief if you know going into a pay-per-view that Batista is going to win the Rumble. So how can you as a fan sit there and criticize indie wrestling where it's brainbuster, superkick, superkick, which isn't for everybody, and say, oh, well, that I don't believe that. Well, 2 days before the Rumble, you already know Batista's winning. Everybody knew it. And then there was a bunch of people who, oh, maybe Dan. I was one of them.
I thought it was a possibility. You know, I definitely thought it was a possibility.
But honestly, you look like you have egg on your face when you're like, oh, well, that doesn't suspend disbelief. So you'd rather just know the outcome than sit through all these.
No, it's not knowing the outcome. My point being is that we've been waiting for so long for Daniel Bryan to finally get that measure of revenge, to finally reach at least some sort of revenge. It doesn't have to be winning the Rumble. It doesn't have to be going to WrestleMania, winning the championship. At least something where we can say, you know what? It's great that we're behind this guy. I'll give you a case in point. A couple years ago, Zack Ryder goes out, makes a name for himself, did it all by himself. He went on Twitter, he went on YouTube, he had his show, the woo-woos, and he got all the merchandise woo-woos and everything. But what happened to him at WrestleMania? He got
kicked in the balls.
He got turned on, he got fucking lost his 7-on-7. He took the fucking loss. He got kicked in the balls by his girlfriend. He got fucking beat up and put in a wheelchair by Kane. The fucking guy never got his big moment in the sun. And why is that important? Because after that WrestleMania, who gave a shit about Zack Ryder anymore? Nobody did.
Now, I might be the only one in this situation saying this.
Oh, no.
I didn't give a shit about Zack Ryder beforehand.
True.
And I'm sure there's more like you.
Regardless, like, but you can't compare Daniel Bryan to Zack Ryder. You can't. Because the response that Daniel Bryan gets from the crowd is Stone Cold-esque. I don't care what anyone says.
Absolutely right.
Zack Ryder was lukewarm at best.
Zack Ryder wasn't lukewarm. People, I think, are more forgiving and more of a wait and see with Daniel Bryan than they were ever going to be with Zack Ryder. It's true that Zack Ryder may have been a flavor of the month, but damn, that flavor was tasty to a lot of people, and they didn't fucking get to finish the bowl. And that's the problem. Daniel, I mean, you can compare the two, yes, but Daniel Bryan is on a completely different level at this point. But it would have been nice for Zack Ryder to not have to get kicked in the balls. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, but let me, from, okay. You're, and look, I get it. People are frustrated. You don't like it? Don't watch it. Stop.
Yeah, but that's a cop out.
Here's the thing. You're WWE, okay? You make your moves. He loses to Wyatt. He doesn't come out in the Rumble. There's a huge backlash. Okay? Now you know. They have to know. If they don't make the move, then I'll jump on the WWE drop the ball. But now they're in WrestleMania season. So you as a fan, you want to see him. Regardless of if you hate the product or not, if the Royal Rumble left a bad taste in your mouth, if they set it up where there's a chance for him to win the Elimination Chamber, main event WrestleMania, you know at least for the next 2 to 3 months, you're watching Raw. If they don't do that, now they're in a position where they can't lose. If they don't push him to the main event at WrestleMania, they fucked up.
Their strongest shows are always from the Royal Rumble to WrestleMania.
True.
I still don't know if they're going to... I mean, I've read rumblings that Batista's putting his title shot up in the Elimination Chamber.
No, I thought it was just going to be for the championship.
See, that's what I thought, too. I don't know what... But apparently...
Yeah, no, because didn't Randy say on Raw that it wasn't fair that he had to put up his title
before
WrestleMania? And now, I don't know how far you guys got, but the whole thing now where John Cena... Sheamus, which a lot of people love or hate, and Daniel Bryan all have that shot at the title.
Yep. Yeah, they're all in the chamber. Yeah, you know, you're right.
But I think that was a response to, because you go and you read your dirt sheets, that's a response to the reaction they got Sunday night.
But that's my point. If you keep making Daniel Bryan get shit on, people are going to fucking lose out. And they're like, all right, fine. Benefit of the doubt. Everybody waits to WrestleMania. Let's wait and see. Let's wait and see. If they don't give Daniel Bryan at least something, doesn't have to be the main event at WrestleMania, but if they don't at least give him something, people are going to fucking start dropping. They're going to start losing hope in him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just losing hope in Daniel Bryan, the character, which, you know, like the casual fan is going to be, but there's also the people that, you know, that respect Daniel Bryan behind the scenes, other workers that look at WWE and they're like, look at what they fucking do to this guy. Like, why would you want to be a part of that machine?
Now you're going into a whole different...
I don't want to go into a whole totally different realm.
I mean, you are, though, because I don't... If the guys behind the scene are getting a paycheck, regardless of where the spot is,
they don't
give a flying fuck what they do with Daniel Bryan. Unless Daniel Bryan, which I think he will, put more money in their pockets, then they should be concerned. But I don't think to a point where there would be a revolution or a huge problem.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I just...
And WWE, if they did it on purpose or not, position themselves where they release the network. So even if you are going to piss off, you trust me, social media, the last couple of days, Facebook, Twitter, I don't know. It just seems like such a work. Like Mick Foley putting out like a complaint about the Rumble.
Better than that. Did you see he posted the video where he took a baseball bat to the TV?
Foley did?
Yes, this was just on YouTube today. He's like, well, it's like it's my daughter's TV, and it's not one of those big old TVs, and I think the baseball bat would be a little, you know, more damaging than just throwing a brick at it. And it was an autographed bat too, which was the sad thing. Like Yankees.
Was it in the child's room?
No. He took it out to his yard.
Oh.
And he laid back in one crack. It was a nice break, but.
It's just
maybe Foley's working us too. Maybe he got Vince's blessing to jump on the bandwagon.
Look, this is just me.
Dewey had some stuff to say too, by the way.
I'm gonna go crazy JFK conspiracy type deal.
Okay.
I think, and I could be 100% wrong, and you could leave me a Facebook message.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think, and I mentioned it last week after we talked to AJ. I think the whole AJ Sting. Jeff Jarrett thing is a work.
A lot of people do.
And I think WWE caught wind and they said, how can we, because look.
I know where you're going.
Sting signs the Legends contract. He's Sting. He makes a deal where it's like, I just want to do, you know, from here till April. I'll promote the network. I'll wrestle Undertaker at Mania, whatever. He does that. He goes away like June. July, AJ doesn't come back, Double J's off doing something, and then they all come back. You know, that's huge headlines for TNA, whether you like it or not. If it makes an impact, I don't know. But
yes,
just the idea, maybe Vince is doing some kind of shenanigans where he's trying, he gets Foley. This is a, you know, go out and bash WWE. Because he's still, Foley still works. He's still under a contract.
No, I think he's done. I think if he's not done already, he's very, very close
to being
done.
He's very close to being done. I think you're right. I think I read that in something that he wrote. Yeah. Yes, he wrote that he was the ambassador. It was in that tweet. It was in that, or that long spiel that he wrote. He's like, I'm an ambassador. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be one after I write this. But, yeah, so he made his kid wrote some pretty nasty words, too. He was, like, swearing up and down.
Dewey?
Yeah, Dewey. Little kid, Dewey.
The crying kid from the Beyond the Mat.
Yeah, little Kane Dewey.
Kane Dewey. But
here's the other thing. I'm sorry. You couple this whole Daniel Bryan thing with the fact that Kevin Nash was in the Royal Rumble.
Ugh.
The New Age Outlaws are your new Penny Period champions. Triple H is in charge.
Penny Period.
I stole that from Tickles. So it's like, not only is Daniel Bryan being pushed, like, you know, put down at every chance, but all Triple H's buddies are in, like, fucking roles the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, but the New Age Outlaw thing makes sense, because they drop the titles, and then they eliminate each other from the Rumble, and that sets up, that makes sense. That sets up Mania.
Talking about the Rhodes Brothers?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
but
then, like, in a week or two, the Usos take the titles off of them.
But that's what I mean. Like, you could have done,
with the Real Americans.
You know what, though? I agree. Because because they are Triple H's friends, it kind of gives that little extra.
I don't think it's even that. I don't think it's Triple H's friends. I think it's WrestleMania season. You're going to give away the match for free. And how are you going to pull in the fans from the 90s, the Attitude Era guys, Goldust? I went to dinner with.
It's not a bad theory.
With my fiance, her sister, and her fiance, and they knew nobody but Goldust and the New Age Outlaws.
You might not be off on that at all.
Not saying you're not gonna pull in those 4 million people that stopped watching
Nitro.
You get
the guys who were like 16, 17 back when the Attitude Era was hot, and they're like, "What, the New Age Outlaws? I loved them." Oh, you didn't know?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll tune in the Raw. Maybe I'll buy the WWE Network if they're going to be around. That you might not be far off on that, Matt, at all.
I mean, because you think about it, they throw that as your pre-show, and then you're like, "Oh, maybe if you're out at a bar, there were three like black kids sitting at the table next to us, and they were like." No. There was no racism whatsoever. They were the least likely people.
Strike.
Least, like, we've been to enough conventions. We've been to enough you know what a wrestling fan looks like. The three least likely people in the restaurant were all in. All into the Rumble.
Yeah.
Like, and then there's the table behind me with the really fat chick with the beard and the retarded kid cheering for fucking Batista. But
we just insulted all demographics in 30
seconds. No, I
didn't
insult any black people. We have Jay Bradley on the show tonight, by the way. I don't think we've mentioned that.
No, we haven't.
Recently released from TNA. But my point, what?
Not to go ahead. Keep going. You're good.
Great talent.
Of course he is. It's just a random. Just an aside. You're the one that's always complaining. We never mention guests until about 38 minutes in.
Well, we did.
I assumed we were going to do that in afterwards.
Well, whatever. It's done now. It'll be in the title.
Yeah, there you go.
Jay Bradley's on the show. That's the title of the show.
But
hey, Jay Bradley's here.
Think about it. Negative or positive, any dirt sheet you go to, social media, I wouldn't be surprised if there was something on like WWE or ESPN because Bill Simmons is a wrestling fan. Like, how they didn't put Daniel Bryan over.
And the WWE picked up huge over
it's
in
been all
the
over
UK.
The place. Yeah.
And WWE has two options. They have the dumb bullshit option where they stick him in some stupid match at Mania and they don't capitalize. Or I think they take the ball and they run with it. Now is the time. If they're going to run with anything, it's between Royal Rumble and Mania.
I can tell you one place where I don't want to see Daniel Bryan wrestle. That's with The Undertaker. That's the one thing I don't
want to
see. Because he's going to lose.
No.
And Daniel Bryan's character at this point needs a big win, and going against The Undertaker is not going to give it to him. He's not going to beat The Undertaker.
See, I will counter because I think Daniel Bryan's the biggest star the WWE has. And what's better than a main event at Mania? Beating
The Undertaker
and ending the streak.
Well, here's the other thing.
I agree with you in theory, but I just don't see it.
I don't see it happening either.
There hasn't been a wrestler more over than Steve. No, more over than Steve Austin since Daniel Bryan.
Let's not go nuts. He's not more over than Steve Austin.
In the last 11 years, there's been nobody who matches Steve Austin.
I don't know about matching, but he's
The Rock.
He's pretty damn close.
No.
Cena in his prime was pretty close.
I don't think so. That reaction he gets on Raw in the cage and the backlash from the Royal Rumble. They've changed their whole script going to WrestleMania because of the way people reacted to Batista winning the Rumble.
I agree to a point. I think we need to see if Daniel Bryan has that longevity after they finally put him over the top, whether or not it's going to be an Austin-esque kind of career. But he's on his way, man. He's really on his way.
Listen, I hope you're right. But there's a reason why they put him in the first segment of Raw. It was because the fans hoped to get it out of their system and not hijack the entire show. They're not doing it to benefit. I mean, maybe they will. Maybe they'll have a change of heart. And I hope. I'm not even the biggest Daniel Bryan fan. Like, I honestly don't care that much about him. But I think that they just do it in spite of him, not to help him. Is what I'm thinking.
Yeah. When was the last time you heard of them turning up a wrestler's music to drown out the boos?
That was because of who it wasn't, not because of who it was.
I don't think exactly. Daniel Bryan is so over. Batista could have won it. Sheamus, no matter who would have won it, they would have had to do that.
I disagree.
I agree with that.
No, because I think the reaction that Roman Reigns got was pretty off the charts, and had he beat Batista, I don't think it would have been nearly the reaction that Batista got.
I agree. And I think that, and we brought this up with Adam, was because they needed something to grab onto because they weren't getting what their plan A was, which was Daniel Bryan.
Do you think that leaving Roman Reigns in for that long was an audible? Like, they were like, we need something big to get. Because threw out 13 people. That slaughters any previous records.
I think they're setting him up.
Reigns is going to be a big player.
Do you think it's going to wind up being the Wyatts and the Reigns at WrestleMania?
No, I think they do that at the Chamber.
The Shield?
The Wyatts and the Shield. And yeah,
the Reigns.
I think that'll be at Elimination Chamber, and I think you'll get a handicap or a triple threat match between the members of the Shield at Mania.
Yeah.
You think? Or do you think that they're going to try to put John Cena over so they'll put him with Roman Reigns?
I've heard Cena and Hogan against the Wyatts.
I heard Hogan's not medically cleared at all for anything. Like, he can't even throw punches or kicks or anything.
See, I forgot that they're going for that whole nostalgia thing. I forgot that Hogan and Piper could be involved in this somehow.
I think the nostalgia thing is, I mean, with the WrestleManias lately, I think it's important to have that because there's a lot of people who don't know.
Speaking of nostalgia, were you as upset as I was that they didn't give Jake a spot in the Rumble?
I was. We talked about it with Adam.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry. I mean, we touched JBL getting a spot as a waste, even because, like, a Zack Ryder could have been there.
Well, El Torito.
Yeah, the midget. It was funny.
A comedy spot. Yeah, it was funny, but like you said, like I would have gotten rid of JBL. JBL was a kind of a waste.
And I'll tell you what. On the Twitter box, Kofi Kingston posted, "On my way to Pittsburgh," and I responded, "No one cares. You're going to get thrown out, do some kind of acrobatic nonsense to get back in just to get thrown out again."
And he did it twice. He got thrown out on top of that pork chop guy, whatever the fuck his name is.
Who just randomly placed him on the barrier.
Rusev.
Yeah, it didn't even make sense. Like, it would have been better, like, if he just picked him up and, like, just fucking stun-gunned him on the railing, and then he was there across his abdomen.
It would have been better if they threw him and he just moved.
And then they had the whole spot that he did across the ring with Swagger, and
with
he fucking
shoe?
Pulled Swagger's shoe off. That was, you know what? I really don't like Kofi that much. I do get a kick out of his fucking SOS music, but yeah, like, I don't know.
It's gotta respect his athleticism, it's so contrived with him.
Yeah, exactly. Because
you know what you're contrived. You know it's exactly. Coming every year. Every year now.
My suggestion was, and this would have been perfect, he jumped up on the apron. Somebody should have just fucking leveled him on his way to the fucking apron, and that would have been it. And they could have did the, and that would have been
the Torito thing was funny.
I think it's a disgrace that he eliminated Fandango.
Yeah, Fandango really has his star fall since last year's WrestleMania.
Holy shit.
I laughed out loud, though, when he just completely just clocked Torito, though. Like, he was the first one to get an offense.
He's another guy that had a spark for a hot minute with the Fandangoing, with the fucking... Everybody was doing it across the country. They had videos of people doing it, and then fucking what happened to him? I don't know.
Under the rug. The Torito... CM Punk showdown was funny.
That was good.
The Torito thing was funny, and I get that. Like, he's part of a tag team. It's a shame that they don't feature the tag team.
Yeah, it's a shame.
They've fallen off already, too. When's the last time we saw them on Raw, other than, I mean, am I crazy? Or they have not been on Raw?
They haven't been on Raw.
They haven't been on in a while. Do they do, like, fucking Velocity or Heat or whatever shows they have left?
Wednesday Main Event or whatever it's called.
Mania Wednesday.
The JBL thing really annoyed me.
Yeah.
And Adam brought up the Great Khali.
Yeah,
they have to have. I mean, I get why they keep him in there, but it's so unbelievable. It's so disbelievable at this point.
Why do they? I don't understand why they keep him in.
Because you have to have. I mean, you have to have your share of big guys in to just.
Yeah, but you had Batista, Ryback, Roman Reigns, Kane, Corporate Kane. By the way, Kane. If you look at Kane from like 2 years ago and now, like he's definitely shed like 30 pounds.
Yeah, he's toned. Yeah.
Dude looks great. It's hysterical that he's just wrestled in khakis.
Yeah, but Kane. The other thing that annoyed the crowd was when he fucking pulled Punk out. Like, just
yeah, but that's the story they're going. Maybe they'll have their. I really hope they don't put Punk and Kane at Mania.
It's not gonna be. I'm telling you, it's gonna be the Chamber. They're gonna fight at the Chamber.
Yeah, right. But then what does Punk do after that?
He fights Triple H. That's the stepping stone to get the Triple H.
Yeah, but wouldn't it make more sense if you're not gonna put Daniel Bryan in the title picture to have him take on Triple H?
Here, the only way they save the Daniel Bryan push is if he wrestles the Undertaker.
And I don't.
And beats him.
I don't think it's gonna happen.
I don't think it's gonna happen either. I think you could. I would like to see that match. That match would probably be phenomenal. I think you're gonna end up with, unfortunately, just based on the reports that I've read, is that you're gonna get a heel turn out of Sheamus, and you're gonna get Daniel Bryan Sheamus. I think the only way you could also save it is if you actually finally put Daniel Bryan against Triple H. But
how cool would it have been? I'm just thinking right now. I'm picturing it. If Jake came out. And he didn't even get in the ring. He just unloads Damian into the center of the ring, like slides him in.
Old school spot.
Everybody bails, but some dummy like Fandango jumps over the top and he's eliminated, but everybody else gets to go back in and he's pissed off.
That would have been. I don't think they've ever done anything like that. I mean, Andre eliminated himself, but.
Right.
But.
It would have been. I would have popped for that.
So, you mentioned Jake Raw. He's in the Hall of Fame.
Good.
Which is awesome. Past guest of the show. If anyone deserves it, I mean, he's up there.
And he buried the hatchet with the Warrior. He was making fun of the Warrior, and then the Warrior made fun of him back, or his publicist did, or something. And so they're all buddy buddies. I'm sure that's all going to work out well for them. What else happened on Raw? Was there anything else that was exciting?
There was a good segment with Orton, Batista, and Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar. And then Lesnar was the... I'm sorry.
You go.
It was option one. He gets a title match. Or option two. He wrestles Batista for the title match. And then he came back later during the tag title match and destroyed the fucking... The Goldust twins. And he said, since they didn't choose option two, chose option three. Brock versus no one.
He's great.
So Brock just lays waste to the Goldust twins. I'm liking Brock now.
Me
now
too.
That Brock and Paul Heyman together, like, enough with the Curtis Axel Ryback shit. Paul Heyman and Brock Lesnar, that's it. Paul Heyman should be with no one else but Brock Lesnar.
But like we said when we started this conversation, the Brock push is so late. If he had dominated Cena, if he had beat Triple H.
Well, here.
I know we're not supposed to remember that far back.
But the loss to John Cena, I didn't mind so much. I think they played it off where it was like an MMA fight where you could be getting your ass handed to you and you still have that puncher's chance or that, you know, like that fluke submission or something like that. That I didn't mind. The whole Triple H needing to get his win back was like, eh. But yes, I do agree. Brock Lesnar should have been this beast for the entire stretch. From last year after Mania till now, he should have just been on a fucking tear and said, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm here to ruin WrestleMania because it's mine.
Batista.
Pitbull.
I can't.
In skinny jeans.
He looked. First of all, he looked like he was blown up in the Rumble.
He was. He was leaning on the ropes. He looked terrible. He was leaning on the ropes.
The fucking MMA shorts and the sambas.
I agree.
Knock it off.
Just be Batista. Be what got you to the dance, man.
You're almost 50. Just go home.
No, he actually looked like a poor man's Brock Lesnar. Like, it was that
he
bad.
He looks too made up. Like, his eyebrows. Does he even have eyebrows? They look, like, plucked. Like, he looks like he had a facelift or he's got makeup on. He's, like, too pretty boy.
It's
and Batista
should Hollywood.
He shouldn't be Hollywood. He should be a monster, just like Lesnar and, to a lesser extent, Ryback. Like,
I mean,
he should be in that mold.
Yeah, Ryback looks more intimidating than Batista now.
Yeah. Does he deserve to be in that position?
He's definitely not a Rock, but I understand why. Like,
I mean,
you know,
he's up there.
It's bringing in a big name and giving him a prime spot.
And he's signed on for a long time. It's not like he's going to be leaving after Mania. He's signed,
he's in.
From what I understand, at least a 2-year deal.
Well, he better start working on that cardio.
Yeah,
that
he better stay
rough.
Off Twitter and stop blasting the fans.
Yeah.
I heard he was flipping off people.
Adam said that. That he was doing mocking the yes chant, but instead of just the index fingers, he was putting the middle fingers up in the air going,
of course he was.
Yes, yes, yes.
And that's another thing. Like, guys like Batista and Sheamus, like, they haven't been there. I know Sheamus was hurt, but for you to just come back and get put into that spot where, you know, even though you may not like him, like, the Wyatts have been main players, and now he's going to get his match with Cena. Even, like, you know what? I would have loved to see, can The Miz, can Barrett, can these guys get up to that status?
I agree.
They fucked up Barrett so badly.
I love the Bad News Barrett.
Oh, I hate it.
No,
hysterical. I hate it.
I like the Bad News Barrett.
I hate it, and despite because of what he could have been instead of this.
That's what exactly, Kevin. I loved the leader of the Nexus, Wade Barrett.
Me too.
I think he should have been champion. I think it would have been okay for John Cena to disgruntledly count the pin. I wouldn't have minded a couple of months of Cena chasing Barrett for the championship. I think maybe, just maybe, you would have turned Cena more face. And here's another thing before I get too far off topic. This whole Cena, love him or hate him, he feeds off whatever energy he gets from the crowd bullshit, that just has to stop. Stop acknowledging it if you're just going to say he doesn't care if you're 50-50 and just go, Cena's the best. Just if you're going to bullshit people, just go the whole nine and just bullshit them from the fucking beginning. I'm so sick of this. Like, well, you know, people don't like him, but he likes the people that don't like him anyway. And I'm tired of it.
It's gone from them forcing him down our throat to forcing everyone's opinions of him down our throat.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. And it's not working for me.
I've had so much of enough of Cena already.
Yeah, I think everyone's kind of in that boat.
And to go back to not having Batista into that main event picture, WrestleMania has come, and wrestling in general, has come such a far off way than having the World Heavyweight Championship be the focal point of WrestleMania. It hasn't been in a while. So to have Daniel Bryan or to have Bray Wyatt or to have Wade Barrett in that title match is not indicative of what WrestleMania is in 2014. The main event is Hogan Rock in Toronto. You know, the main event is John Cena Rock, not with a belt on the line. So, like, you could still have two title matches on the show. I don't like that. I think the title match should be the main thing. But it's not what wrestling is anymore until they did the unification. But you could still have your title match and have your main event.
Yeah. Look at what they did for years. They put the World Heavyweight Championship as the curtain jerker match. Yeah. You know? And that was when it all started for Daniel Bryan, when he fucking got his shit kicked in 18 seconds. That's where it all started.
So as we wind this down and go to Jay Bradley, did Raw make up for them dropping the ball at the Rumble? How did you feel about Raw?
Made up is a rough thing, I think.
Did it restore your hope that Daniel Bryan would be thrust into the main event?
It turned things back a little bit. I think like we were talking about, it was that bit of comeuppance, that feel good moment, but It came because the Wyatts interfered. The Wyatts. Jesus Christ. Why do I keep calling them that?
Well, that's what they are.
The Wyatt family. I keep calling them the other guys, the Reigns's.
The Shield.
The Shields's. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hate to say it, but I guess we need to wait and see. Kevin, what do you think?
I think Raw as a show in itself was perfectly fine. I actually, like I put on Facebook last night, that I actually felt good at the end of Raw seeing three baby faces cheering and having the crowd support behind them. And it just made me feel good. And I think Raw was entertaining. We had a lot of great matches. The two tag matches were great. The Usos and Axel and Ryback was good.
Even the women had their working boots on.
Yeah, they did it. It was okay.
What'd you think of the six woman suplex?
That was new.
pretty ridiculous, but
I'll tell you what. As a whole, up until, for me personally, up until Mysterio came out at 30, I thought the Rumble was good. I thought because they did the whole Daniel Bryan losing, and that instantly for me was like, he's winning the Rumble.
That's what a lot of people thought.
But Brock looked strong. No one really cared about Orton Cena, but it did set up.
I thought there was a good match. I didn't get to say this. Towards the end, I thought there were a lot of fun spots in that match.
What'd you think of the ending?
Cena-Orton match?
I don't think it was that bad.
I thought it was okay. It's just that we were sick and tired of seeing that match for the 18th time.
Give Randy Orton credit, though. When the crowd started with the boring, he grabbed Cena in the face lock, and he brought him down to the mat. And they did the smart thing, and they wrote it out. How many times we hear guys talking about that?
Yeah.
Where they're like, fuck this. We're not letting the crowd take control. We're taking control. And they just fucking sit it out, and boom.
But the Rumble itself, up until Mysterio, set the table for Mania. You know, no one, Orton was boring, whatever. Orton Cena was an Orton Cena match, but it got the Wyatts involved. You set up Goldust versus Cody. You set up the Shield breaking up and them breaking out as stars. Raw.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
It set up a lot. You're right. You're right. It
and
did.
They go on the Raw and Raw.
Which is textbook Rumble. That's what the Rumble is
exactly
supposed to be.
I just for editing purposes, I know we're running so late. Maybe we should just wrap up our portion and just let Jay Bradley run for the second half.
Sounds
good. That works for me, man.
All right. One quick thing that I did want to bring up. I don't know if you have any news or tidbits, but here's something that came across the wire today. The grand jury out in Bumblefuck County, Pennsylvania, is once again looking into the Jimmy Snuka murder. Well, Jimmy Snuka didn't get murdered.
Well, supposed murder.
The alleged.
What they're trying to prove.
Yeah. And they were releasing some of the old stuff, saying how, like, the victim had, like, scratches, bruises, cuts all over her face, neck, all over the place.
How Snuka's story changes from story to story.
Well, then again, Snuka's probably partaken in some thing. I mean, he's made it known that you know, partying all the time and whatnot, so... And then again, this all happened 31 years ago now. Like, this is a long time ago.
Well, you know,
I don't remember shit when I was like 9 years old, you know.
We'll see.
We talked about Sting a little bit.
But, I mean, on the topic of Sting, I mean, quick rundown of TNA. They did their second week at Genesis. Gunnar retains his briefcase over Storm.
I saw that match. I thought it was just kind of silly that the briefcase fell in the ring and that didn't end the match. Like, you had to have possession of it. Like, they kept... It's like when they're telegraphing.
I think that's the same thing that's always been the case in ladder matches, I thought.
Yeah, but they kept... You know, like, how you know the rules, but you don't need to know the rules?
Right.
And they keep telegraphing, like, you have to have possession. You have to have... Like, I don't know. It kind of takes... Like, when they go, it's a 15-minute time limit. You know they're going to fucking go the time limit. Like it kind of takes you out of it a bit.
Yeah.
Not taking away from the match, but I don't know. It was just kind of silly. But I digress.
Austin Aries beat Saban again for the X Division Championship.
That's been going back and forth between the two, hasn't it?
Yeah.
When's Manic getting back in that picture? Velvet Sky
in a cage.
I don't know.
When you said Velvet Sky, I was picturing Velvet McIntyre in a cage.
And then Magnus defends his title against Sting's contract.
Sting.
And it's pretty much the same thing as Magnus AJ with a ton of run-ins. Long story short, Magnus wins. He rips up Sting's contract.
Which goes to your point that maybe they are bringing Sting back eventually. Why would you make a guy that's like 85 years old look so good on the way out?
They did the same thing to AJ.
Respect.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's not the way it works in the business.
Oh, I know.
You know?
Yeah.
Just think about it from this perspective. How much news would it be if Sting goes and he does signs a WWE Legends deal?
Sting. You can jump in on that.
He signs a deal. He shows up at Mania. He does whatever he needs to do for the network. And then a week later, he shows up on TNA.
You know what?
WWE's not that stupid.
You know what that's going to look like? Oh, look at this fucker. He went to WWE because he knew he could make money there, and then he came back to the hellhole that is TNA.
No, not necessarily.
That's what people are going to think.
If it's done right, and I think they are, even like I mentioned last week, if they go as far as Jeff Jarrett starting his own promotion, getting on CMT.
With Kobe Teeth.
And they get a deal on CMT where he's the backer. He's the one that signed Davey and Eddie. And then he brings in Sting, AJ. And then they just fold Impact because better deal on CMT. What are you two Fruit Loops doing?
No, I sent him a text that wasn't supposed to be to him.
Oh, the one that just says
podcast? Yeah.
I was like, why did you send that to me?
Yeah.
But.
Well, we got our name of the episode.
I mean,
podcast.
I mean, there could be big things on the horizon for TNA. There couldn't be. Sting signing a WWE Legends contract, which has been circulating all day today.
All day long.
Is interesting because some say it's not to wrestle the Taker at Mania. It's just to promote old WCW shows on the network.
That wouldn't be a bad thing. Like, honestly, like, if I turn on the network, like, and I see Sting talking about, you know, like, okay, they had a commercial for one of their new programs, which is all about the Monday Night Wars. Well, you know, you have access to all these guys. You have access to, like, Dusty Rhodes, DDP, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash.
Flair.
You know, no. Flair. What better person to be part of that whole thing than Sting? Because Sting was always a WCW guy, and he was around from before the war started until the very end. Like, he was the last guy to shut the lights out on fucking Nitro when they went, you know, to the McMahon family.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that WWE is smarter than... They'll get matches out of him, I think.
You think so?
They might
I definitely think so.
You know what it's going to be? It's going to be one of those Bruno Sammartino, Ultimate Warrior, you know, let Triple H work that magic that he does. Hey, Sting, we're not like that anymore. This is what we do. If we put you in a match with Taker, it'll be 20 minutes, but it's a lot of big spots and rests, and you'll be fine, and you can wear your T-shirt.
No, he's got to get himself into shape, dude. There's no way he's wearing that shirt on Mania.
Well, Mr. Ass has been wearing a shirt, and I don't think he's in that terrible
shape. He's not
shape.
Sting.
Yeah, but he's not in bad shape. I don't know.
No, he's huge. All right, you guys want to talk to Jay Bradley?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, do you want to do any plugs before we talk to Jay Bradley? Or
you just going to go Jay Bradley interview into silence?
And scene, I guess. Or, all right, you know what? Yeah, we can go to plugs after that. Let's call Jay Bradley on the hotline now. We'll be back at some point.
All right. Hello, this is Gunner right here, the modern-day Viking of TNA Wrestling, and you're listening to Shining Wizards Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, now joining us on the Shining Wizards Hotline, he is... The ass kicker, the monster of the midway, the lonesome one, Jay Bradley. How are you tonight, sir?
Woo! I got a little applause there. I'm doing all right, guys.
Yeah, smattering of an applause. It's like an Impact taping.
Whoa, come on now.
Wow. Well, you know, if anybody from Impact is hearing this, that wasn't for me. I have no venom to spew. That was those guys.
That was us wizard sleeves. That was us.
How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing all right. Just got in from the gym and just kind of mellowing out, playing some Xbox One. That's about it.
Nice. Are you doing the Xbox One and the interview at the same time?
No, I'm not. It's actually my home. It's at the home screen, so it's not doing anything right now.
Oh, because we had we talked to Stevie Richards, who's a huge video game guy, and he was telling us how he could do like Skype and play the Xbox One, which I just find fascinating.
Yeah, you can. I've actually done some other interviews via Skype on my television that has the Xbox One on it. It's a pretty cool device, like just beyond playing video games, and you know, that's primarily what I use it for. But just some, you know, I can get Netflix on it and Skype, and literally, it'll probably rule my entertainment world as soon as the WWE Network gets on it, which is supposed to be this summer, because then I could just rotate between, you know, DVD, WWE Network for old wrestling and video games and never have to get up.
Now,
so somehow I have to put a toilet seat somehow in my sectional couch.
I'm surprised Microsoft didn't think of that yet, actually.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out some way to train my dog to, you know, make protein shakes and, you know, cook. So I don't have to do that either.
I'm sure you can't just find a woman to do that for you.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, well, you know what? Like, then you got to train them. You got to make sure they go to women's school where, like, you know, they know how to do the laundry and clean and, you know.
There's,
you know, women nowadays, they're not too hot on all that stuff, especially if you ask them if they, you know, you show them their, you know, women's school diploma, they kind of get offended.
If you use your Xbox One and the internet, you can find mail order brides. They'll do that stuff for you.
Yeah, but I'm not too fond of some gnarly Asian chick just trying to get over here for a visa.
Yeah, but if she's making you protein shakes and cleaning, I mean, it's a win-win, right?
Yeah, but then they probably got some, like, some disease all up in their cooter and everything else, so.
You can make them sleep on the floor, though.
I'll just wait for the droids to get invented and catch up with R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Like those creepy sex dolls? You ever seen those sex dolls? What? Don't shake your head at me.
I've seen them. They are quite creepy, and that's not what I would want, but hey.
They're going to take over. Sex dolls. They're real-life sex dolls. How creepy is that?
I think it's creepy that you know
some... I'm not surprised
that
internet nerds like you guys are all into sex dolls and stuff
like
that.
Don't lump all of us into this. This is only Matt right now.
Hold on. There's a fucking movie about a guy who falls in love with his phone. An internet sex doll is not the craziest thing that's ever come out of my mouth on this podcast.
Well, this is true.
This is off to a great start.
What?
And Jay's miles away just staring at his Xbox going, what did I get myself into?
He's already punched out. Everyone, Jay Bradley, thank you.
Oh, I'm here.
So, Jay, you mentioned the WWE Network and going back and watching old wrestling. Fan as a kid growing up?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, I can't remember exactly when it started. You know, wrestling was kind of off limits growing up in my house. My mom hated it and wouldn't let me watch it. So it was kind of one of those things I had to do behind her back, which, of course, made it more alluring to me. I was definitely more of a WWF kid, you know, just the larger-than-life presentation with the athletes and the production and the music and everything. You know, that's what hooked me in as a kid to that company, you know, and I thought that, like, you know, NWA and WCW were kind of, like, Bush League because they didn't have all that stuff. It was, like, after I got into the business or started getting into or wanting to, when I got more into, like, other styles of wrestling, that I realized, like, you know, the NWAs were, like, the workhorses were and the much better in-ring product than, you know, WWF at the time. They just had the glitz and the glamour for all.
And Jay, let me ask you this. You said that you were a fan growing up. When you come across other talent in the business that may have not been fans growing up, is it possible to be in pro wrestling without being a fan first?
Yeah, it's possible because it does happen quite often. Not so much like, you know, like the independent level anymore. You know, but certainly when you get into like WWE, and, you know, they scout guys from all sorts of other athletic ventures. And even my time there, you know, there were a lot of guys from, you know, bodybuilding. There were guys that were amateur wrestlers on the collegiate level and collegiate football players or, you know, arena football players. You know, I don't mean to, some of those guys do really, really well for themselves if they end up taking to it or falling in love with it or having fun with it. I think sometimes it's really hard for some guys that aren't fans or don't have a passion for it to really get it, you know, on like the emotional, visceral level, like to really, you know, to put it as a priority. It kind of just becomes like my personal opinion, becomes like it's just like a 9-to-5 form. It's just a different type of a job to earn a paycheck. And, you know, sometimes if the heart's not in it, or it's not really what you want to do. And sometimes it doesn't work out. But, you know, I'm actually just reading, finishing up Stan Hansen's book too. And, you know, that's a guy who liked wrestling, but wasn't a fan growing up. And, he was a guy who was a football player all the way through college and had a brief NFL stint. And, you know, there's a ton of those guys from that era because, you know, the NFL wasn't paying the mega bucks that they are today. And, wrestling in size of, you know, guys, you know, wrestlers and football players were very similar in size and what you needed to do well and draw money, you know, the athleticism, the size, the height, you know, that sort of a thing. So like the money was almost the same back then, but like the same thing happens. Like there was more of it back then, I feel, but the guys that did well, you know, became fans and fell in love with it, it seems. And I think that still today, it's just, you know, it's just done a different way.
Does it frustrate you that you went the route of a lot of guys? And I feel like you don't get the recognition that you deserve because you are a Steel Domain guy, and a lot of people associate that with the CM Punk and Colt Cabana. But does it frustrate you that you were kind of last of a dying breed where you would go, you know, in a weekend you'd go from Chicago to Missouri to Virginia and home and bust your ass, and then, you know, as we said, they turn around and they find someone who's an amateur wrestler and they just kind of open the door to them?
You know what, like at first it was a bitter pill to swallow. You're kind of like, well, you know, this is what I've always wanted to do. And, this is who I am. And not only like what I am, but my dream, this is my life, but it's the same thing in the walk of life. You know, I have family in the corporate world, my mom, my brother, you know, I outside of wrestling for a little bit, just to, you know, in between contracts, you know, I've had other jobs in the real world, so to say, you know, just to keep some money coming in. And it's the same thing as any other genre. Like someone passes you up because of, you know, nepotism of, you know, their buddies with someone's dad, or you know, old fraternity buddies or family. It just, it is what it is, man. You know, sometimes it's a blessing too that you don't get, you're not in that position. You know, some of those guys come in and they think they've got all this potential and all the tools to succeed, and you know, they get the attention of the agents or the coaches because, wow, look at this guy, he's got this great, you know, athletic resume, but he just doesn't live up to the hype ever. He just never lives up to his potential, you know, for whatever reason, you know. And thankfully for, you know, whatever reason, well, I mean, there's multiple reasons, I'm sure, but I've been blessed enough to pretty much the last, you know, 7-8 years, you know, wrestling full time has paid my bills pretty much. So you know, I really can't complain. It's just part of the nature of the beast. And that's the same thing in the corporate world. If you go out there and you're trying to work up your way, you know, in an office. So it's just life, I guess.
And life has just an interesting way of running itself. Throughout us doing our research for this interview with you, I don't know, so I'm prefacing this question by saying we don't know if this is true or not, but during the research, it was mentioned that you had a couple setbacks in your career, including an overactive thyroid, which would cause you to fall asleep during a wrestling match. Is that true? Is that false? Is it over-exaggerated?
It's over-exaggerated. That actually comes from a rib from two guys you mentioned earlier, CM Punk, Colt Cabana. yeah, I did early on, like when I first started wrestling, my first couple of years, like I got diagnosed with an overactive thyroid. Like my body was burning through like any calories I was intaking. It was working about 5 times faster than a healthy teenager of my age should. And, so what it was doing, it was causing me not like narcolepsy or anything like that, but I would be going so fast and like I'd eat, and I would never gain weight for a little while. and then I would get tired really easily. So I'd go on road trips with these guys, and I would just, you know, I'd be sitting there, you know, reading, and I would just, oh, I'm fucking tired, I'm going to go to sleep. So that pissed them off, so they started throwing water on me, you know, to keep me awake while they were driving or whatnot. And then, you know, it just evolved off of a rib, and I think they mentioned it on some shoot interview, and then it got taken away, you know, and now it's like, you know, internet mythology, because now it's written somewhere on some message board or Wikipedia or some shit like that. Now it's like written in stone or some shit like that. But nah, so part of it, yeah, like I did have, you know, some setbacks, but that's just extremely over exaggerated and embellished.
Well, thank you, Wikipedia. At least, look, at least we didn't jump into it and be like, so we heard you fall asleep during matches.
Yeah, have you?
I knew
the
there had to be more to it, because that's just, I don't know, seems off. You mentioned,
yeah, like, do you really think people would put me out there? You know, even as green as I was, like if I was falling asleep during matches or practices or anything? No, like it's just absurd.
Well, you had a good look. I mean, I'd risk it if there was like a 25% chance of you falling asleep. I'd throw you out there just for, you know, you look awesome. You have a great look. You're fucking the tattoo. You're a big guy. The boomstick. There's a reason why I'm not a wrestling promoter and I just sit here on a couch and do a podcast. I'd take a chance on you.
Could you imagine?
Well,
like,
you're about the same knowledge as, you know, 90% of the indie promoters out there in the world right now. So it seems like you get a head start.
There you go. I'll take that as a compliment.
He dominates his opponents for 15 minutes and then he just falls asleep and he gets pinned. That's a great gimmick. Can't win the big one because he always falls asleep. No,
I think we're losing him.
Yeah.
So you say
I'm sure here.
You traveled with Punk and Cabana a lot. Being with Punk so much, I mean, did you see it? How, you know, people say, you know, so and so has the it factor. Was that? Did you take notice of that, or were you just kind of focused on your own career at that time?
You know what, like, Punk's Punk. He's been Punk since the day he got in the wrestling business. There's really no difference between Phil Brooks and CM Punk, the performer. Like, he is what he is. And you could tell, not that, like, he necessarily, you know, any of us got it 100% in the ring. I think, you know, Danny and Ace at the Domain, along with Kevin Quinn, really got us all off on the right foot with our basics and our breaking us in with the respect for the business and the basic techniques and the groundwork to have great careers. But, you know, like, he was one of those people that, like, you know, as I look back, like, as far as when you look for someone who can be a star or can be a draw or get someone's attention, like, he always kind of had that. He stood out in the crowd, you know, like, even then, you know, he wasn't as tattooed up, but he had tattoos, you know, the way he dressed, you know, like the hairstyle he had, like he just stuck out, like before even, you know, the whole pop punk kind of thing that blew up in the early 2000s, like he was doing that before. And then from there, you know, he just had like a passion for what he did and a lot of courage to pursue it and a lot of confidence to pursue it. You know, along with that, you know, he found himself at the right place at the right time with WWE. I think a huge part of it, too, and I'm not taking away from anything Punk's done. You know, you got to remember there was that, you know, sort of a small, you know, steroid scandal after the unfortunate Benoit incident where a bunch of guys got busted for, you know, having their names on a pharmacy list. And then, well, here comes, well, here's CM Punk. He just got on the roster. He's a guy who's openly drug free and not, he's got this interesting look that stands out and attracts attention. And, you know, Vince gave him the ball and, you know, he's done really well with it. So
you got you, he does his thing. Meanwhile, you spend a good 4 or 5 years, a lot of Midwest promotions. You kind of make a name for yourself in IWA Mid-South. that experience, I mean, it seems like that time frame you were down there was really when Ian had his finger on the pulse of independent wrestling. You know, yourself, Cabana, Punk, Hero. It's a who's who of wrestling talent there. How much did that experience prepare you for your next big step, which was your developmental contract with WWE?
You know what? I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think Ian necessarily had his pulse on it. I think Ian got extremely lucky. And, you know, I've had my fallings out with Ian Rotten, and you know, I don't, you know, nothing against the man or anything, but there was that time period, you know, what we're discussing right now, like maybe like early 2000s, where so much talent was coming out of the Midwest. And on any given weekend, somewhere in the Midwest, you had like Punk, Cabana, and me out of the Chicago area, along with, you know, a guy by the name of Eric Priest, who we trained with, who did be well for himself, you know, on the independent scene. And then you had like Ken Anderson and Sean Daivari, Austin Aries from like the Wisconsin, Minnesota area. You had guys coming out of Michigan, like Truth Martin, who's still doing his thing in Ring of Honor. You had Chris Sabin, you had Alex Shelley, you had Jimmy Jacobs. And on any given weekend, and it's somewhere in the Midwest, most of us were on the same show. You know what I mean? Or we were always running into each other. Ian was running in Louisville on a weekly basis, and he let us come down pretty much whenever we weren't booked somewhere else. So I feel in a lot of ways like, you know, he got lucky that there was so much talent that was willing and to drive and be passionate and be a part of it and keep working with each other. And don't forget, like, you know, when he was running Louisville, Chris Hero was there, and that's when Claudio was starting to come to the States. And you had some, like, older Memphis guys coming back. Like, a Bull Payne was in there. Tracy Smothers was around. And it just became, like, this hodgepodge of, you know, mixing pot of just wrestling talent that was there at the time. And literally that's how my, you know, any agreement I had with Ian was, like, yeah, kid, whenever you're not booked, just come on in. And I'd show up, and he'd be like, shoot, I didn't know you were going to be here today. I'll throw you a match. And then, you know, from there, you know, he started to expand a little bit, which was good and bad. Unfortunately, it was bad because he had to expand because he had burnt so many bridges with so many buildings in Kentucky and Indiana where he was running, so he had to get new places to run. But then again, they gave him new markets like the Chicago area to run until he burnt that out. And, you know, more people wanted to get in there because, well, all this talent's coming in here. So now we got guys driving in from the East Coast or guys getting flown in, or, you know what I mean? So it just became this, you know, like a breeding ground for quality indie talent. You look at that time, a lot of those guys that were there, we all came out and did something with our careers pretty much. And it's been unfortunate that I don't think anywhere since, like, the next group of indie guys that kind of filtered in, like, to me, and again, it's going to sound like I'm being really arrogant, but, like, after that kind of era, like, the next crop of indie guys that should have stepped in and really ran with it, they didn't. And I don't know why that is. Like, there's just not a lot of quality places to wrestle anymore, not quality places to train anymore, so no one's getting pushed. And unfortunately, I think a lot of the guys nowadays already have, like, the mentality that, you know, they're already superstars. So, you know, why don't they get paid, you know, big booking fees, or why don't they, you know, why aren't they doing something more? Like, there's like this aura of, you know, immediate gratification, or, you know, they deserve something that they don't have. So, yeah, that's my take on all that. Sorry, long-winded.
No, it's fine. I think in the terms of there not being another class of indie guys since you, I agree 100%. But I think now I think is a real special time with independent wrestling. You know, and I don't want to jump all over the place, but we kind of are. You just got out of TNA. Chris Hero just got let go by WWE. AJ Styles is on the independent scene. There's up-and-comers, Johnny Gargano. You know, Matt Cross is still floating around. Look at his Extreme Rising. You'll be there on the 8th in Pittsburgh. I mean, you're going against Papa Don, who's been on the indie scenes forever, and it's a shame that it's just taken this long for him to get that recognition. So I think now is a great time for independent wrestling, especially since everybody kind of seems down on the WWE scene.
No, I agree. There's some good stuff going on there. It's just it seems, you know, few and far between. You know, like I said, when I was coming up, it wasn't hard to get booked or to find bookings once, twice, three times a week or on a weekend. You know, now it seems kind of hard to do that. I know the economy is a big part of it. You know, no one just has the cash or wants to take the financial risk of running an independent show. But, you know, back to what I was saying here a minute ago, I know a promoter that's running a seminar with Jake the Snake Roberts. It's a $100 fee, and three guys have shown up, have signed up for it. Three, which blows my mind. It's like, here's a guy who's going to the WWE Hall of Fame. He was just on Raw. Clean, sober, is one of the best wrestling minds ever. And three people will commit $100 in an afternoon of their time to try to better themselves and excel. That's really sad, because I compare it to, like, that same time frame when I was on the indies. And I say like I'm some bitter old-timer here, like, well, when I was back in my day. But, you know, I remember doing a camp with Dr. Tom Pritchard when he was the head of developmental up in, like, Milwaukee, and there was, like, 40 guys there, and it was a lot of the guys I named earlier, and you can tell, like, all right, well, we made the sacrifice of an afternoon and put our money down and, you know, acquired knowledge and opened doors for ourselves because of it. Now I don't think guys do that. But, yeah, I think the indies are interesting right now. There's more room, I should say, and more of a chance to stand out more if you're good at what you do, just because the talent pool is kind of low right now. And there is quality out there. It's just kind of hard to find. You know, you forget, like, you know, groups like Extreme Rising are out there that draw 1,000, 2,000 people an event, which is great, you know, in this time. You know what I mean? You know, Ring of Honor still does those kind of numbers, anywhere from like 700 to, you know, 2,000 people, depending on the market they're in. I haven't seen a pro wrestling guerrilla show in some time, but I always hear good things that they've got that rabid fan base still that's always with them. You know, like the Dragon Gate family seems to be doing well and has found their niche, you know, audience with their flavor of wrestling and what they present. You know, I just feel like there's not enough of the quality right now, and to give a lot of the guys like a Papa Don, who would do really, really well, I feel, if he got an opportunity somewhere, you know, to take the next step. And the quality that's out there, I think it's bogged down by what, you know, we call the shindies, you know, the shitty indies that are out there, where, you know, if I pay my $10 and take my kids to on a Friday night or whatever as a parent, and there's 15 other people in the crowd, and there's guys in the ring that look like they've never been inside of a gym, let alone done anything athletic, and they're wearing gear that's mixed from Hot Topic and Walmart. So that's a problem. You know, I'll say, people like that, and this, again, sounds like I'm being really harsh and negative and back in my day, but just stop. It's like their role, the guys that wrestle on those shows, the guys that run those shows, their role as being a fan of wrestling and being a, you know, a super fan, whatever you want to call them, is more vital to the industry than them trying to be in the ring and be a wrestler. You know what I mean? It's like, hey man, if you got money to spend on a show, or if you want to try to wrestle, I'm not trying to, you know, deter anybody from following a dream or living a dream, because I've been blessed to do that. But look at yourself in the mirror and be like, okay, this guy, wrestler A, wow, that guy looks like an athlete and certainly moves like an athlete. Wrestler B is twice my size and he's all muscle and about 12 inches taller. And me, I look like the pizza delivery guy. I probably don't belong in a ring.
Yeah,
but you know what? Spend your money on the guys you do like and buy their merchandise, buy their DVDs, go to the indie shows that they're at. Because I'm telling you, like, the people who run those shows do more harm than they do good. And if they would put the money behind the products they appreciate and the wrestlers they appreciate, you know, that's the lifeblood of this business is the fans. You know what I mean? So the more fans we have, the better everybody does, the better the product is, the better the boys are because we're all making more money and the less of the crap there is.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the name of the game. Everyone wants to make money. I mean, and you're absolutely right. That stuff hurts the wrestling business. Because it's crap. It's god-awful crap when you see, you know, there's footage of like months ago where Nikolai Volkoff is wrestling on a gym mat in front of like 20 people. And someone
had I saw a picture going around Twitter that was a wrestling ring set up in Walmart.
Yes, I saw that picture.
Well, why not?
Really, like, who the hell thought this was a good idea?
Well, it's real easy to buy your gear if you're wrestling in a Walmart.
Yeah, and what do they do? To get the people greeters that can't control their own bodily functions anymore to referee or wrestle?
Someone's got to do it, I guess.
Who thought this was a good idea? It's just ridiculous. But it happened, and then it kind of ruined this for the rest of us. But, you know, yeah. Whatever.
No, it gives wrestling a bad image because it's not fair to guys like you and the Papa Dons and everyone who busts their ass, and you make a commitment to the sport. Because I'm not going to say it is entertainment, but it's an art form and it's a sport. You commit yourself to it and you bust your ass and you travel and you miss weddings and birthdays and all this other happy horse shit just to give the business a great name. And then some asshole in Podunk, Arkansas decides he's going to put a wrestling ring in a Walmart. It's ridiculous.
I'd have to agree with that.
Yep.
So you get your big opportunity. You're a young man. You get your WWE developmental deal. I mean, is that do you feel like the climb to the mountain is starting to pay off?
Yeah, you know, when that happened, I remember the day vividly. I mean, it was on cloud nine when it finally happened. But I actually think after I came in, I started to see things kind of change in the recruitment process or the hiring process. And I think I was actually one of the last guys that John Laurinaitis had hired, like right off the indies. You know, I never had to go to a week-long camp workout or anything like that, like OVW or Deep South. I was at TV, did some workouts. You know, actually around the same time that Punk was getting looked at and right on the same time he got signed. And then, you know, a few months later, I got an opportunity to work a dark match. They had me do a workout in the ring beforehand the next day, and I got signed later that day, you know, and I started seeing a lot of guys after that. You know, they were sending guys in for like a week-long evaluations or, you know, things along that nature. And it's kind of weird, like everything they've kind of been doing lately, I say lately, like the last year to 2 years, the processes that they put in place was all stuff they told me they were going to do, you know, 5 years ago when I was with the company. So none of this is surprising me, the way their business has kind of changed and evolved. It's all stuff that like John Laurinaitis or, you know, other people in the company told me was going to be happening and be implemented. You know, it just takes a while for those things to take effect or to happen. So, I mean, it was great to finally, you know, pay off. You're like, wow, my hard work's finally paying off. But you know, when you get there, you realize, man, like the real work starts now. It's easier to get hired than it is to keep your job. So the real work begins once you're hired.
No, right. Absolutely. I'm sorry. You wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you spent a decent amount of time with the developmental, I mean, with guys in developmental and when they translate to the main roster, they seem to put a lot behind guys like you and even a guy like like Paul Burchill at the time, a lot of stock in them in developmental. Then when they get to the main roster, I mean, yourself included, they just lose focus. How is it possible that they put so much stock in a guy 1 minute, and then the next minute on the main roster, it seems to be gone?
I kind of give it a couple things. Like in Paul's instance, you know, I can't speak for Paul just from knowing what I know from the situation. Timing hurt Paul, you know, or at least the second time. You know, they brought him in the one time to be a pirate-esque character, and they wanted him to be like the Captain Jack, swashbuckling, yeah, you know, scoundrel sort of a guy. And certain people in the company had no idea. They were thinking more like, you know, a comedic Captain Hook. So right away you have like important decision makers like split on what to do, which is never good, because then like nothing will get done, because it'll just butt heads and then just falls to the wayside. And then later when they brought him back up with Kaylee as his sister, well, they brought that up. They tried to had some ideas for him from what I remember. And then Vince decided to go to PG and thought having, you know, a brother and sister combo who were kind of risque might flare a few people in the wrong way as far as not being PG, of kind of like, you know, the Cruel Intention sort of borderline incestuous, maybe not sort of innuendos. So right, we just kind of pushed away. I think a lot of it, as far as my situation was, again, a lot of it's timing, man, like right place, right time, and right people, right time around you. There was probably four or five times where I got the, you know, supposed big call that I was going to start on TV, and just things weren't working out. Like the guy I was supposed to start wrestling, you know, would get hurt. Tag partner I was supposed to start tagging with would get, you know, fired or suspended. Someone who I was supposed to be working with, you know, needs the company. Just like, you know, one thing after the other. But they saw enough value in me, you know, to keep me around for so long. But I think at the end, if you remember that summer, they threw like, I don't remember the exact number, but they threw quite a few guys up there on the main roster and didn't have anything for any of them for a while.
I was just going to say that. That was you were part of that whole, like, when the revamped ECW was around, you were kind of right there for the, like, the new, yeah, talent initiative, whatever it was called, correct?
And then they really didn't have anything planned for any of us. And I think out of all those guys, like, Dolph Ziggler is the only one that kind of lasted and really went on to do anything. And you're kind of like, and I think the time on that, all of us had been in a system, the developmental system, for, you know, 2.5, 3, 3.5 years, where it was kind of like, all right, let's see if we can do something with these guys. And it was just kind of like, I'm not necessarily a total sink or swim, but, you know, trying to get something out of the money they've invested, I guess, you know. And I know they had some ideas for me. And again, you know, tag partner gets fired. You know, I remember having a meeting with Vince where he had ideas for me. At the time I had long black hair and more of a full beard.
Right.
And he pulled me into his office after a dark match and was just, you know, I'm really impressed with you. I like what I see. Your look matches the way you wrestle. You're rough, you're rugged. You know, I got some ideas. Well, you know, but I want you to cut your hair and shave your face. And I was like, okay. So I go to do it at TV, tell John Laurinaitis, hey, boss man says, go do this. He takes me to the stylist, take care of this. I went back and knocked on Vince's door and he didn't even recognize me. And he was kind of like, well, that's going to change things. And I was like, okay. You know, and it's crazy as that sound, guys, that's the way some of it works sometimes. You know, someone has an idea, something happens, the idea gets pushed to the wayside and then it gets forgot about because there's five more ideas in front of them. You know, it's crazy how the business works, and it's kind of hard to explain to people that don't have the experience from the inside. So
it's crazy just to think, like, if you don't cut your hair and shave your beard, like, does your career go the same path? Or is Jay Bradley, like, fucking, are you in the Royal Rumble? That's just the craziest thing ever. Being around Vince McMahon, you know, you mentioned your meetings. I mean, what's that like, fan growing up, WWF fan? You know, here he is, the fucking godfather of wrestling. And he's telling you he loves you. I mean, that must just put you huge pop, right?
Yeah. You know, like the first time I met him, I'll be honest with you, I was like nervous as hell. Like, I was like, oh shit, two on one meeting with Vince and Steph. And I'm like, oh God, you know what I mean? Like, it was really nerve wracking. And I don't think I did too hot in that meeting. Not like I said anything stupid or I did anything stupid. I was just so like nervous and tense. Like, I don't think he really got a feel for me or got to know me. But then, like, you know, the more I was on the road or the more I dealt with him at TV, you know, it's much more easy to talk to the man, especially like once you start realizing like it's all business to him. You know what I mean? Everything is business to Vince. You know, it's all, you know, what is best for his business. And I know that's kind of like one of their sayings now on TV of some sorts, but that is the way they think. It's like, what is best for business? What is going to attract the most money? What is going to attract the most viewers, the most eyes on the product? So, you know, it did get, you know, easier and to speak with them and deal with them. But at the same time, you're just kind of like, all right, you like me. Great. That's awesome. You know, you got ideas for you. But at that time, too, I'd also learned that they've also had ideas for me for the past 2.5 years that haven't panned out. So, you know, at that point, I was kind of like, all right, well, we'll go in this direction right now and see what happens. And then you alter the course if you have to.
Now, you mentioned your meeting with them. Did you get to go to the merchandise room up in Stanford where you just get to take whatever you want?
Oh, yeah, I rated that.
What'd you get? What's the goods? I got to hear. It's like a drill.
It's not as cool as you guys would think, man. It's not like anything and everything you like they have there. It's just kind of like overstock stuff. And don't get me wrong, like, I mean, I walked away with probably like 50 DVDs. And that was a big thing for me. Like, it was just, I grabbed like every DVD they had, but it's just, it's kind of like overstock stuff that, you know, or stuff that, you know, they ran too much of that didn't make it into the stores, or they had too much of it in the stores and are just sitting on it. So, like, you know, I'm not a big toy guy or a t-shirt guy, but I did fill up a couple boxes of DVDs.
A couple of boxes. That's awesome.
It's a good score.
So you do your gig with the WWE. You float around Deep South. Deep South closes. You go to OVW. They throw the strap on you there. You get to wrestle Jim Duggan, D'Lo Brown. They're really investing a lot in you. And like you said, they bring you up. They have 100 ideas. They get you on SmackDown. And it seems like things are going well. And then, unfortunately, your release comes. Did you see the writing on the wall knowing that they didn't have anything for you? You're shaving, you're cutting your hair, now they don't like your look.
Yeah. Well, at that time, yeah, I did know the writing was on the wall, and I kind of knew it was coming. Like, after I cut my hair, I went to a European tour with a SmackDown crew, and like Hunter and The Undertaker, you know, took a liking to me. They thought I looked like, after I cut my hair and shaved my face, they thought I looked like a young Elvis because I had jet black short hair, and if I shave my face all the way down, like, I have very, very fair skin, and I look young. So they're like, oh, I look like young Elvis. And Vince really liked the idea of, for whatever reason, of me being something like Elvis, or like, you know, the son of Elvis or something. Like, he didn't really know what, but he wanted me to do something with it. And I remember going up to Stanford to meet with the SmackDown writers, and meeting with Dusty Rhodes in Tampa about it. And everyone was just like, this just isn't a good idea. Like, we don't know what to do with this. We don't have a direction for it. We don't, you know, we don't see this in you. It's like, I remember Finley telling me I needed to get rid of it because it was going to kill my career at one point. But, you know, you got to do what the boss says. So I was trying to make it work, and it just wasn't working. And I remember talking to Hunter about it, saying, hey, like, it's just, I can't make this work. And he was cool with it. He's like, well, if you can't make it work, hey, we got to come up with something soon. Otherwise, you're just going to get pushed aside. And then, you know, the boss is going to go somewhere else, or creative is going to go into another direction with somebody else. And, you know, I understand it. That's the way the business is. And unfortunately, that something else never came. And when I knew that wasn't coming, you know, I knew my time was limited and I was going to be shown the door.
Unfortunately, you're shown the door. Do you go through a phase where you're just like, just defeated, and you're like eating a fucking pizza every day, like us three slobs?
No. I mean, I'm not saying defeated. You definitely go through I don't know if you want to call it a depression or just like a downswing, or how to phrase it, because like you're just like, well, I think I got more angry than anything, where it was kind of like, you know, F them, F the world. Like, you know, I busted my ass for so long. And then, like, you just realize, like, you know, it was completely out of my hands. And you kind of get back to normal life outside of WWE, because when you're in their bubble and their world, like, you kind of forget there's a whole other world out there outside of that company, because it's so encompassing. And then after that, you know, it was just kind of like, you know, all right, well, like, I'm just going to explore life and just live for a little while, you know, not worry about WWE or not worry about wrestling as much. You know, I never stopped, you know, there wasn't any time, like, I stopped going to the gym and, you know, yeah, sure. You know, I indulged myself in, like, you know, some sushi buffets or some pizza there and, you know, a few, you know, day drinking at the beach in Florida, but, you know, like, I never really got out of control with it. Like, you know, I'm just going to, you know, I never got, you know, massively out of shape. I never stopped working out. I never, you know, for 1 week, if I was going to gain weight to be stronger, or I was going to lean up, or, you know, to condition my body, I never really stopped any of that. So, nah.
So you go WWE, you're out, you're back on the indie scene, and then something I really enjoyed was you landed with Billy Corgan's Resistance Pro. Being part of an upstart company, what was that like for you to be one of the guys that was chosen to be on one of the first shows, which, in my opinion, the company itself is phenomenal, being out here in Jersey. I wish we would get more Resistance Pro. I know they put it on YouTube, but I like the idea. They run a monthly show in Chicago, and they seem to be doing really well. Just to be part of a startup company, what was that like for you? Was that is that like a tip in your cap?
At the beginning, it was really fun. Because it was all these guys, like, I wanted to get in there and go with. And I always thought Chicago needed, like, and it's gonna sound like I'm like trashing people, but I'm not, like a good wrestling company that could appeal to, like, the mass, the casual fan. Like, and I'm not talking like in the diehard indie guys where I want to see 1,000 super kicks, enziguris, and then a bunch of people getting dropped on their head. Because to the average people, you know, I equate them to my parents, who aren't big wrestling fans, but they watch because of me. Like, you know, they don't get into that. You know, well, okay, that guy just dropped that dude on his head, and they did that in the other match, and the match after that did the same thing after they did the same kick. So, you know, but I always thought, you know, Chicago's got like 4 million people in the city and another 4 million in the surrounding area. And I always thought that it could be a viable market, because it's a great wrestling city, if someone could put a product out there that could appeal to the casual fan and be a little bit family friendly, where kids could go to it, you know, have some characters. Because to me, like, the diehard fans are going to go just because there's wrestling, and they're going to want to, like, bitch and moan about what they would do better or what they would do worse, or why everybody screwed this up, because that's what they do. And I really thought R-Pro was going to be that for a while. You know, and there was a lot of talent at first that I wanted to get in there with. Like, they had El Generico in there for a little while. And then, like, Rhino was around, Harry Smith was around, and we had some great things planned for me and Harry Smith that just, never panned out because Harry got offered a full-time job in New Japan. But yeah, at the beginning it was fun because they were bringing in, you know, quality talent and guys that were kind of unknown at the time, like a Steven Walters out of the Carolinas, who's a really good talent. And I was there, and another guy by Rob Anthony is another local guy out of Chicago that's done pretty well for himself. And then you mix in like a Harry Smith and a Rhino, and then, oh, we got a special appearance by Vader or Jake Roberts, you know, John Morrison. You know, it was a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I think the company's kind of lost that in the last year or so. Like, just the quality of talent isn't there, unfortunately. That's definitely kind of taken a downturn. I haven't been on the last handful of shows, just, you know, due to some business disagreements with, Billy's partners, and then my schedule, you know, being in Japan and the holidays and whatnot kind of had me restricted. But yeah, definitely for that first year, it was, you know, you put someone like Billy Corgan out there, especially who he's like a rock icon. He's like the most played artist for rock music in the 90s. And then in Chicago, where he's so well known because that's where he's from, you know, I really thought that could have had a chance to really do more than it actually has.
All right, now we fast forward now to TNA. Of course, you're put in the gut check challenge. Now, to you, for someone that had a vast experience prior to being in TNA, you've wrestled just about everywhere. Was that, I mean, you obviously did it, so obviously it wasn't a huge insult to you, but going in and doing the gut check first, was that just another program to you, or did you feel slighted that you had to actually go through it?
No, not at all. You know, again, it's just business, guys. Like, you know, I know about 6 months before that, I did a dark match for TNA. And, you know, I know I was thought well of, and, people were looking for a way to get me in the door there on a regular basis. And, that just was it. You know what I mean? Like, there was no predetermined anything to, as far as the gut check goes. I wasn't smarting up to anything if I had a job or not. What you guys saw is what I knew. And I just knew that was, like, you know, the time that was Pritchard and Bischoff's way of introducing new talent into the company. And, you know, so it wasn't, you know, I didn't feel, you know, slighted or like anything at all like that. Looking back, I'm a little bit disappointed in the company, that they didn't utilize that tool more to like springboard someone like me, to establish them as like a star or homegrown star, because, you know, they really could have. And I really don't think they utilize that for anybody that did that, where you're like, all right, well, this guy just won gut check and here, let's go. But instead, you know, they just kept me off TV for a few months and then really never did anything with me after that. So I think that was definitely an opportunity missed, or, you know, something positive really could have been done out of that, not only for me, but the company in general.
Yeah, we've brought that up a couple of times about how it doesn't seem like anybody, clearly from the gut check, ever pans out long term for the company. That night where you when you get the two yeses from Pritchard and Al Snow, was that all on the spot? Was that like you said, what we saw is what you knew?
Yeah, that was all on the spot. All I knew that day was I showed up. We did a little like backstage pre-tape thing of me like warming up, and then they got us in the ring. They're like, all right, the judges will stand here. Jay, you stand here. Brian, you stand here. JB will be in the middle. One of you will get sent away. The other one will go to the vote. If you need to cut a promo, you got 60 seconds. That was all we were told.
Yeah, they did. Once, I guess, Taz was on it first, if I remember correctly, and then he said, no, you had a chance to, quote-unquote, kick out. And for that being off the cuff, that promo that you did was sick, by the way. That was awesome. So all that was just straight up you being you and just talking.
Yep.
Oh, wow. No, I mean, we always talk about it. It's a subject that always comes up with us about promos nowadays and how it's too scripted and you can't just be yourself anymore. And we hear that all the time about in WWE. Was TNA similar in that aspect, or did was Gut Check kind of par for the course for the company where you had a little bit of free reign, or was it mostly still of the scripted variety?
You know what, man? It's kind of sound like I'm BSing you, but I really couldn't tell you. And here's why: I never really got the chance to do many promos.
I thought about that as I was asking the question. Yeah.
Here's the thing. I got 2 points to make on this. If you saw any of my stuff from Teen Annie promo work, a lot of the stuff I did was post match, backstage, reaction stuff. And that's literally an associate producer and a cameraman will grab you and just go, here, talk about this, talk about your match. And then you just cut your promo or you talk, and then they throw it up on the website. I did so many of those things that no one ever even saw. There'd be times I wouldn't be doing anything at TV, or I'd be there for one match. I'd be sitting around bored, and I'd go grab a cameraman and be like, just let me talk. And then I'd be like, here, just show this to somebody, hoping it would spark an idea. And I think there was only the one time that I had an actual in-ring promo with Hernandez. They tried to give me some scripted verbiage, some bullet points, and I just kind of, that was, the one time I think I actually had anything given to me, and I just kind of looked at it and was kind of like, okay, I know the bullet points, and I'll do it my way. Because at that point, I was kind of like, if I'm going down in flames, at least I'm going down doing it my way. I really couldn't tell you guys. I didn't have enough experience with anyone there or on the TV show to really grasp how that was done. And kind of my second point was, it was weird. I was actually at Lisa Marie's restaurant a couple weeks ago in Chicago, and she, after we watched some, I think we watched Impact actually. And afterward, they threw in maybe it was a WCW DVD, maybe it was NWO or something like that. So it's not fairly old, but you're talking 10, 15 years. And you just watch the promos that Nash and Hall were doing just off the cuff, when they just invaded, WCW, and you're just like that was just so much better than anything that's going on today, because everything today seems so contrived. It is what it is. And I think some people, if they really have the art of cutting the promo, they eventually get, the muzzle taken off of them, so to say, but you have to work to get that privilege first.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate, 'cause it seems like a lot of these guys not a lot, but there's a fair share of guys who have the wherewithal to do a good promo, but then you have these TV writers and these sitcom writers writing shitty promos, and it just comes off horribly. You mentioned your time at TNA.
I don't think it comes off natural. You know what I mean? I think a lot of guys, it comes across a lot of times that guys are just reading lines as opposed to, I can look at a lot. It's like being an actor, and what we do isn't acting. It's very real, the physicality, but it's reaction. You have to put, the good actor, like a Johnny Depp, so to say, he can, look at the line that Jack Sparrow has to say, but then become Jack Sparrow and those mannerisms and the facial expressions and how he enunciates certain words, or maybe he puts an accent on certain words, is what really makes it feel good. It makes it feel right. I think that's where a lot of guys miss, where they just go out there and go, I'm supposed to say something like this, so I say it, but then where was all the other stuff on it? Where was that emotion in your face? Where was that emotion in the words? Where was that character in the words? Where was that feeling? And it just comes flat, and that's when it becomes that's my girl and my title, don't touch them.
Yeah, and that's it. There's no, there's not. You're just, you're like.
And it could have been so much more.
Yeah, I couldn't. Oh Jesus, this microphone! I couldn't agree more. It just comes off so flat and so it just. It's like you're watching somebody read like the Grammys were this weekend. They're just reading the teleprompter. Whatever's on there, they're gonna say. Your time in TNA, you win your gut check, and then we don't see you for 5 months, and then they do the Bound for Glory qualifying thing with the gut check guys. And finally, for me, it's like, thank God, we're going to get to see, you know, Jay Bradley or a Joey Ryan or a Christian York, somebody who deserves a spotlight, because me personally, I can't. Aces and Eights was sucking the life out of all of us. It started off great, and then it was just on and on. Nothing against Wes Briscoe and Garrett Bischoff, but it was just too much. You get in the Bound for Glory, and then you're just pushed aside, and it's like, not saying you're the next the Magnus, but, I mean, they have an opportunity to make a star. Jay Bradley is a young, he's up and coming, he's got a great look. The boomstick clothesline is fucking off the hook. And they just throw you to the wolves. I mean, it's frustrating as a fan who just wants to see wrestling be successful and TNA really elevate themselves to the number two, but it always seems like they go back to the Jeff Hardys and the Stings. And for you, are you excited when they go, you're going to win Bound for Glory and you're going to qualify, and then they waste you? Is it frustrating? Is there excitement? What's the range of emotions for you? Because Bound for Glory, yeah, I mean, know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all, you're, like you hit it, it is all those things. And I knew, unfortunately, right off the bat that I probably wasn't going to get used right away. Al Snow smarted me up to that because they left for their big UK tour like right after I won. And again, you know, me, I speak from a very egotistical standpoint because I only know my own business and what's in my own head. I don't know. I'm not privy to what goes on in those, you know. I always equate wrestling with politics as a bunch of older people that aren't necessarily hip or cool, trying to tell other people what is hip and cool or what they should want to do. You know what I mean? Like, it's, to me, it has that same kind of feel to it. And I'm not privy to those meetings about what direction they want to take their business, creatively or otherwise. But, you know, at the time, I'm like, all right, well, the first live Impact from Chicago, my hometown, you know, I'm thinking, well, maybe they'll realize that and send something, you know, send me up there to do something, at least a dark match. And well, that didn't happen. And then I kind of got smartened up that, hey, we're going to do this gut check tournament. You're kind of the favored guy that we're probably going to put over in it. And then we're going to put you in the Bound for Glory series. And then from there, we're going to, you know, basically they told me that the gut check thing was going to be step one to kind of get me going. And then the Bound for Glory was kind of be the way to establish me, you know, on the roster and, you know, give me some credibility. What exactly happened? I don't know. And that's where the frustration sets in. To where at first I'm sitting there thinking, man, this is going to be great because I'm going to be getting in there with 11 other guys in the company that are kind of like, they're up there. You know, I'm going to get in there with the Samoa Joes and the Bobby Roods, who are kind of like the TNA original guy. You know what I mean? You want to put that title on them, but also like Ken Anderson and Jeff Hardy, you know, like all, you know, those guys who are kind of like in the main light. And I'm going to show the company what I can do with these guys. You know, I'm sort of thinking if they're going to establish me through this, like, great, you know, you pick up a couple wins at the right time, bam, you know, they got themselves a homegrown star. And it just seemed week after week, I don't want to say they lost interest, but their interest in their business just wasn't on doing that at the time. You know, what changed? I don't know. I know I just kept doing my thing the best of my abilities and talking to creative and sending in ideas and talking to, you know, management. You know, I'm kind of not at loss for words on it, but loss for explanation, really. You know, I'm of the mindset, and again, I don't want to come across like I'm you know, eating sour grapes or spewing venom, but I look on it like you've got me at, you know, as big as I am, what I bring to the table, and you've got Bobby Roode, whose storyline is he's on a losing streak. Well, what, how would it, it would have done a lot of good for the company overall if I go in there as the new guy, beat Bobby Roode, who is a former heavyweight champion in his losing streak, and that starts him on his downward journey still. You know what I mean? Like, you know, storyline still would have got across. You start building yourself a bigger star. You know what I mean? Like, what would it have hurt if I go in there and beat up and win against a character that's not even supposed to be able to wrestle because he's a lawyer like Joseph Park? You know what I mean? Like, boom, you know, I'm getting momentum behind me. This new rookie to the company has got something. You know, what would it have hurt if I, you know, in a weapons match, in the hardcore match, if, you know, I stole the match after Abyss, or, you know, Joseph Park, Abyss is out, kills everybody but me, and I'm the last one standing, and I win. And suddenly, like, I'm in the top five of the Bound for Glory series. Where did this guy come from? Now we got a star on our hands. Now we got a guy we got to watch for the next, you know, 6 to 12 months because he just somehow pulled this off. Again, that's my egotistical point of view because that's what I see in front of me and that's what I would have liked to happen. You know, why it didn't, I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I don't have any reason. I was never given a reason. I'm not supposed to have a reason from them. You know, it's their business. They're going to do what they want. There's a lot changing in TNA over the past, you know, year and a half. It's going to continue to change. And unfortunately, you know, I think some of those changes, I got caught up and I got left out in the cold a little bit. You know, new creative direction, new talent coming in, new director of talent coming in, people leaving the office, people coming in the office. That's a lot, man. That's a lot for any company, especially in entertainment and the wrestling business in the span of like 6 months. If you just think about what TNA has done since the Bound for Glory series in the last 6 months, think about all that change. So you know what, man, like it is what it is. I take away a lot of positives and I'm thankful for the opportunities that I have. Would have loved for it to have been better. But I know the door is open for me still there, just as it is everywhere else in the pro wrestling world. So there is no ill will whatsoever.
It's like you mentioned, though, it is a shame that you're the guy that they basically handpicked out of all the gut check winners to get into Bound for Glory. And like you said, there were opportunities, and I don't think it's egotistical. I think you're just, you know, especially with your time in WWE, you're given a character and it's like, well, now we got to come up with something so you stay relevant, so you stay fresh and you make a name for yourself. And, you know, you reach that point where this was a perfect opportunity and everybody was just kind of looking at something else or looking a different direction. But you did say you everything was an experience, and part of your time in TNA was spent on a tour over at Wrestle One in Japan. We've had a lot of guys on the show that have traveled, and they say, you know, they wanted to go to Japan. They love Japan. They wanted to see what the training in the dojos were like, you know, try to make a name there because, you know, it seems like Japan, you know, especially nowadays, is more receptive to, you know, to talent coming in from the United States and from Europe and around the rest of the world. What was Japan like for you? Did you enjoy yourself there? Was it a great experience? Was it not so good?
You know what? I loved it. I think it was probably one of the best experiences professionally and personally I've ever had. You know, Wrestle One treated me incredibly well. I think the world of Mr. Uchida, who is Muda's partner in the company, and as well as Muda himself. The tour was great. The locker room was awesome. I really enjoyed the Japanese, the fans, the people, the culture itself. And again, it's part of the reason, you know, I'm so thankful. You know, I don't know that I would have gotten that opportunity without working with TNA. You know, they sent me over there. I was sitting at home, not making any money, which sucks. And they sent me over there and let me, you know, do my thing over there, get that experience, make some money, and expose a whole other market to to my pro wrestling and a whole other market and a world I can work in now that's been opened up for me because of that experience. You know, Wrestle One's a fairly new company. I think they're only on like their fifth or sixth tour right now. They didn't have the dojo up and running yet. I think that's actually just about to kick off soon in the next couple months, I think, because I know Muda was mentioning it to us over dinner that it would be up early this year. You know, I had nothing but positives about Wrestle One and the experience there. I'd love to go back. I know they thought highly of me and want to bring me back at some point in time. Unfortunately, you know, they've got a business relationship with TNA right now, and it looks like they're going to be doing some maybe cross promotion or, you know, talent exchange. And unfortunately, that maybe means I get pushed aside again for the time being. But you never know. There, you know, I'm not opposed to, you know, going to work for one of the other companies. You know, once, you know, no one wants you in pro wrestling until someone else has you. And, you know, there's three or four other companies that, you know, you go over there and, you know, earn a decent paycheck for. So, no complaints.
Now, the beginning of the month, your tenure with TNA comes to an end. And I hate to use the same phrase I did before. I mean, did you see the writing was on the wall? They weren't using you. You just mentioned you're sitting at home. You're not getting paid. I mean, was this something you were just like, just let me go so I can go do my trade elsewhere and at least make some money?
Yeah, pretty much. That was pretty much my feeling. There, after Bound for Glory, I had meetings with John Gaborik, head of talent and creative now, you know, expressing, you know, not in a negative way, just my disapproval of my position in the company about how I wanted to be used more, and I felt I had a lot more to offer than what I was able with the limited capacity that I've been able, you know, the limited little bit that they had utilized me. I felt I could be utilized so much more, had so much more to offer the company. I wanted to be utilized more as an asset. And I don't think a week went by where I didn't send in an idea or two to creative or to the office of how to utilize me some way, shape, or form, you know, on the road or on TV or within the company somehow, always trying to make a positive impact and be proactive. You know, unfortunately, they weren't biting on any of them. And I was like, okay, you know, but that's part of the wrestling. You know, if you don't believe in yourself, if you don't come ideas with ideas for yourself and try to market yourself to not only the fans, but the powers that be, no one's going to do it for you. And if you don't have confidence in yourself to go do it, well, then why should they invest money in you then? That's kind of my standpoint. So I just kept doing it and doing it. And then they, you know, they sent me to the Japan gig, and I kind of thought that that might start something because me and Big Rob Terry were getting a really good reaction together as a tag team, and we worked pretty well together. And neither one of us were doing much or anything on TNA TV, so I thought, hey, you know, you guys need some tag teams. Why not utilize this as a way to springboard us onto TV? You know, like, you know, you've got all this footage available from Wrestle One of me and Rob just tearing through everybody we face in Japan, and you can utilize this and be like, hey, these guys just got back from a tour of the Orient and, you know, or of Wrestle One in Japan and went undefeated as a tag team. You know, now they're taking it, you know, Impact Wrestling, and hey, here we go, we got another tag team, a big man tag team. When's the last time you saw that before, you know? And again, they just weren't biting on it. And I was sending in tons of ideas, or not ideas, but just like pictures and videos of the trip to, like, you know, their Impact 365 stuff, and they weren't being used. So I was just kind of like, okay, well, writing's on the wall. And actually, when I came home being when I was back, you know, visiting the family in Illinois, in Chicago for the holidays. I made arrangements to move back to Chicago full time. Cause I had a feeling like, you know, my time was going to be limited. It had been, you know, 6 months since I had been utilized on TV. And, you know, if you're not helping the company make money, well, then you're costing the company money. And it's, I'm, like I said a few minutes ago, just look at the last 6 months, all the changes TNA has gone through, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. People have left, people have come in, policies have changed, you know, approach to the product has changed. And I just really feel, you know, I got caught up in that. Unfortunately, I was a side effect of some of those changes. And, you know, it is what it is, but it's business. You know, it's not the first time I've been released, nor will it be the last. So you just got to move on.
Yeah, just listen to this. Just hearing how you just put yourself out there and you just kept trying and trying and trying, and they wouldn't bite on it is just, for me sitting here, it just pisses me off as a fan, because I want to see Jay Bradley on TV.
But you know what, like, you know, and I'm not, again, man, I'm not trying to sound bitter or throw, you know, negative vibes out there, whatever the
right,
term
of
is.
Course.
That's wrestling, man. That's how it is. It's the same thing in WWE. You know, I guarantee that the same thing guys go through in Ring of Honor or even in, like, you know, in Japan. It's no different. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
you send an email in for, like, hey, I got this great idea for this angle, or, you know, and sometimes it might just be, hey, I'd like to, what about a match with me and this guy? I think it would be entertaining, or it would be good. Or sometimes it's, maybe it's a month of television, you television segments that you laid out or you thought up, and, you know, hoping that someone would bite on it or make it their own or massage it a little bit. But that's the way the business works. You know what I mean? They're not going to take every idea and use them. You know, you got to remember there's other guys that it's their job to be creative and write. So they've got their own ideas. They've got their own direction from their bosses or the network or what the sponsors are sensitive to and what they're not sensitive to. And, you know, there's so much that goes into it. So it's like, I don't take offense to, you know, hey, they didn't bite on my ideas or, you know what I mean? It's just,
right.
It is what it is. It's like, I know that's the business, and that's part of my role as an independent contractor and a wrestler to keep myself relevant and to keep be proactive to try to, you know, to get an opportunity. So
now, as we wind this sucker down, a couple questions from our fans online. The Boomstick Clothesline, is that a tribute to Stan Hansen and a love for the Army of Darkness?
Well, it's both. For me, it's more of a Stan Hansen thing. I've always got kind of compared to him, like, just even when I got into the business originally years ago, the way I moved and the way my body was built, I got compared a lot to Stan Hansen and Terry Gordy. I'm really similar in size and similar build to those guys. You know, they were both 6'4", anywhere from, you know, 260 to 300 pounds. And right now I'm 6'4", about 273 this morning. So I'm right in there, and just, you know, they were big men that could move. And they were really athletic.
About to say, yeah, that's hell of a company to be compared to, man.
Yeah, you know, so it's flattering, and the way the clothesline just developed, like, you know, for a while I was like, yeah, I want, you know, before I really understood wrestling, I gotta have some cool finisher or do something flashy, and then, you know, I just realized, like, man, I threw a hell of a clothesline, and when I do it, it looks like I'm killing guys, so I'll just start making that my finisher. And then that made me just fall in love with Stan Hansen more, the way he protected it and the way he built everything around it. And then where the Evil Dead reference comes in is actually back in my previous time in developmental with WWE, Big Sal from ECW was hanging around OVW. And when I would hit people with the clothesline, little kids started going boom. And Big Sal, huge pop culture nerd, you know, loves horror, loves video games, loves comic books, and he's a huge Evil Dead fan. So he named it the Boomstick, and I just kind of picked it up from there and ran with it.
Nice. Very good. Very good. Well, those of you guys out there that want to check out Jay Bradley, I highly suggest, we're big supporters of Extreme Rising, February 8th, 7 o'clock bell time. If you can't be in Pittsburgh at the Irish Center, extremerising.com. I know High Spots does an iPay-per-view for them. It's like $15. I got the last one in December. Awesome. No glitches, no bullshit. Jay Bradley's taking on Papa Don, which... I mean,
that sounds like a hell of a match to
me. It honestly could be a main event, and I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass. You know what you're doing in there. You have a great look. You wrestle like a motherfucker. As you say, you win ugly. It's just a great card top to bottom. Stevie Richards against Sabu, Devin Storm, Rhino, Luke Hawks, Rich Ortiz, Blackout in the Hit Squad, Matt Cross is there, Jay Bradley. Definitely get there and check those guys out. Support Extreme Rising. Support Jay Bradley. Where do you see yourself in the future? Is the independent scene your go-to now? Extreme Rising, Dragon Gate, PWG. Where is Jay Bradley going?
Man, honestly, you know, I really don't know. I've kind of been, I don't want to say completely inundated with a bunch of offers. I've got a lot of independent offers. I've had to can't take all of them because I don't know what my schedule is going to entail in the next couple months. But man, being around this business for as long as I have, I got friends in a lot of places, and they've got friends even more places. The last couple weeks, I have been emailing and on the phone with so many people that are who's who of pro wrestling. You know, I don't want to talk out of turn, but it's just kind of like I'm trying to find the, you know, what the best opportunity is for me at this time where I can do the best. And that's kind of like where I'm going to go. You know, maybe it's another, you know, tour or two in Japan. Maybe it's back to WWE. Maybe it's Ring of Honor. The door's still open for me at TNA. And as I know, John Gaborik has said he'd love to have me back in the company at some point in time, but. You know, it just got to be what I feel is a good fit for me as a person and as a performer and an opportunity I feel I can do the best with. You know, so, I mean, definitely to be on the independent scene, you know, not only Extreme Rising, but I've taken some more dates for some people who have kind of want to lock me up on a regular basis. So you'll be hearing more of that from me. You'll probably, you know, catch some announcements on my Twitter in the near future. But as far as the big stage goes, man, it's like I said, it's just what I think is going to be the best for me to do the most with it.
And you mentioned your Twitter, guys. Get out there. Anyone that listens to this podcast, you're listening to this interview, if you're not following Jay Bradley on your Twitter, it's at Jay Bradley PW, as in pro wrestler, or pussy...
Wizard?
Witch? Pussy witch.
Pussy
Jay
wizard.
Bradley, the pussy witch. No, Jay Bradley...
What the fuck is
I don't know. I was
looking, what the hell just happened?
I was going funny, and I crashed and burned a la Tony.
Don't blame me for that one.
At Jay Bradley PW. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/Jay Bradley. Seven t-shirts. Support any independent wrestler, not just Jay Bradley.
But, of course, support Jay Bradley.
Yeah, but right, support Jay Bradley.
I mean, support him and support everyone else that has a T-shirt. He's got seven awesome designs. I like the Lonesome Jay Bradley one with the chick and the bottle of Jack. He also has the Win Ugly T-shirt, which is fucking sick. He's got a Boomstick jersey, the 50 Shades of Jay, which is a pop culture reference to that book.
Yeah, well, hey, man, chicks dig the Boomstick, so you got to have a shirt for him. Yeah.
Of course.
And
anything else you want to read off of the
list? I got another
list?
One coming that's like the FBI's most wanted list for my indiscretions as a wrestling rebel and renegade at the moment.
Very good. Very good. You got to go. You got to check back ProWrestlingTees.com/Jay Bradley. And then you have a Facebook, Facebook.com/Jay Bradley. Don't get it confused with the Facebook.com/Jay Bradley Impact Wrestling. Because I don't really think that exists. Or if it does, it's not up to date.
Yeah, and then I actually have I'll have a website up here soon in the near future. That's just going to be the same as my Twitter handle, just jbradleypw.com.
Nice.
Awesome.
Jay, it's been a pleasure. We really do appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. And we'd love to have you back sometime.
Yeah, guys, no problem. Just buzz me.
No worries.
Awesome. Thank you, Jay.
Jay Bradley, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, what's up, wrestling fans? It's the Psycho Shooter, Drake Younger, the PMA World Heavyweight Champion. And I tell you what, you are listening to Shining Wizards Podcast, baby.
And that was Jay Bradley.
Ladies and gentlemen.
A very, very great interview. Great guy. A lot of fun stuff off the air.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very interesting. Just remember, guys, please go out there, support indie wrestling, support guys like Jay Bradley. Follow him on Twitter at JayBradleyPW. Tell him you heard him on our podcast. Maybe he'll hate your face. I don't know. Or he'll like you.
Sounds about right.
He's got a t-shirt on ProWrestlingTees.com/JayBradley. We also have a t-shirt on ProWrestlingTees.com.
We have three t-shirts.
Shining Wizards.
We've got our Be a Mark shirt. We've got our Shining Wizards retro logo. And we've got our Shining Wizards Network shirt, which still has the old website address, by the way. I don't know if I should change that. I don't really need to change that.
Yeah, don't change it.
I figure it's a, you know, it's a collector's item now.
Hey, what does it say?
It's got the SWN dot Shining Wizards.
Oh, yeah, that's not right.
No, it'll take you to the new site, which is ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. I mean, we own the domain, so it's not like it really matters. That shirt will be correct into perpetuity, as they say.
Nice. Well, as we wrap down this wind down this episode.
That's it.
Send a special thank you to Smash Wrestling, smash-wrestling.com. They had a great show on Sunday before the Rumble.
Wrestling
Chris Hero
Smash.
Against AJ Styles. They sold out 600+. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that because they had to move a couple things around and finagle things so that they could run the show in the building.
All right, we'll just put it like this.
Allegedly?
Allegedly, they were at capacity. That's all. It was a sellout show.
And then I know they just announced The Danger Zone is their next show with Jay Lethal, Mickey James.
Oh.
So a lot of things coming from Smash Wrestling. Please follow them on Twitter at Smash Wrestling. We're doing a DVD giveaway. I was supposed to announce the winner, but I have no internet connection, so when I get home, I will announce a winner. I'll mention you in a Twitter, and then I will send out your DVD. Also, Heel Turn Tees. Follow them on Twitter at Heel Turn
Tees.
T-E-E-S. They're going to be a new sponsor starting next week. We're going to do Heel of the Week with them. So check them out, support them, follow them. We're going to have T-shirts to give away from them. A lot of good things going on with the Shining Wizards podcast. Big shows coming up for Pro Wrestling Syndicate, CZW. Get out there. Support your independent wrestling. I think that's all I have.
We do have our brand new Heart Attack shirts that you heard at the top of the show. They are pink and black Attack. They are gorgeous. We've got very few in stock. Very limited in the sizes, too. So if you want one, head over to shiningwizards.com/merch. They are $15 shipped, a little bit more if you're in the UK and in the Canada, but that's not our fault. That's the United States Postal Service for you. Not to mention that we have to fill out a customs form to basically, you know, like we could drive the T-shirts over the border and probably save money instead of paying postage to Canada.
But I'm due for a trip to Canada.
There you go. Trying to think if this. Oh, yeah. Barjutsu.com, BARJUTSU.com. The book, The American Art of Bar Fighting, is now available. It's at a bookstore near you. If it's not, go there and have it ordered. I know they can do that. Or you can get it at Amazon.com in paperback or for your Kindle. You could also get it at BarnesandNobleBN.com for your Nook and also in paperback. And I think that might be it with the plugs tonight. Kevin, where are you appearing next?
Ah, boys. Little lull. Till after the Super Bowl, then I got shows all over the place, and I can do that next week. You know, my Montclair room is usually always popping. I'll be in Hoboken on the 19th, Dover on the 21st. If you're in Jersey, I'll definitely keep you posted if you follow me on Facebook. Also on Twitter, at Kevin Garifo, bringing live stand-up comedy to you all over Essex County and New Jersey and New York. So that's it.
And, of course, the Shining Wizards Network. We've got 9 great shows, and we're, I guess, on a test run with Dan Lopez doing the final say. I think he's just trying to prevent himself from dying on the way home as he drives from wherever to...
I have no comment on that.
Aw, Dan.
And, yeah, we'll have a closing number. You know what? I'll pull up a closing number now. I think I might have one handy before we go. I think that's it, boys. This has been a long night. I don't know why it was so long, but I'm just babbling now.
Well, we're saying that we still got to get to Jay. Talk to Jay.
No, we did.
No, we already did that.
We already did Kevin. That.
And this is how you ruin podcasts.
Good night, everyone.
Peace.
I don't think you ruined the podcast. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, you know who I want to talk to next week?
Who?
Mr. Touchdown.
Oh, Mark Angel.
That's right. Are you doing a special edition with Matt Solo?
No, I think I'm going to record it Tuesday, and then we'll just plug it into the show Wednesday.
Okay, Mr. Touchdown next week. Oh, and do we announce Steve Carino on February 12th?
It's on the website.
Already on the website. So.
Oh, who? I wonder who put that there.
I don't know.
Good night, everyone.
Peace.
See ya.